Tune in to the Neil Prendeville Show weekdays from 9 a.m. on Cork's Red FM.
You know how you talk about different months and different issues with regards to weather and the changing of the seasons? And another thing, of course, that we're talking a lot with regards to various months at the moment is the bank holiday, the thank you very much bank holiday for COVID work and people who worked away and need a bit of a reward, they're saying. So February is one of the ones they're considering, according to the Mail today. It probably would tie in with St. Bridget's Day, but I've been noticing recently over the past few days that non-believers are very unhappy with another kind of religious connection to a bank holiday. They think that we've got enough of those already. But one of the ones that's being mooted, because apparently St. Patrick's Day falls on a Thursday next March, and they're saying, wouldn't it be good if we had a four-day celebration, which would be the Thursday, the Friday, and then you got your Saturday and your Sunday, and so on and so forth. So, I mean, talk about making things difficult, like, talk about over-analyzing it. When everybody knows the bank holiday should be in July. So we'd have a June one, a July one, an August one, and so on and so forth. Because people want long weekends across the summer, don't they? I mean, it makes perfect sense to me. Harrowing story making the front of the Echo today of a man. This man strangled his ex-girlfriend to death in his native country, and he will be sentenced later for continually beating and twice raping his 12-year-old stepdaughter. Front page story making the Echo of a 32-year-old man. Now, he can't be named to protect the identity of his victim, but he served a 10-year term for killing his former girlfriend. He was released from prison on condition that he not leave his native EU country until January 2022. But he did, and he came to County Cork in 2019, met the child's mother and married her 2 months later. That's a front pager and quite detailed court report making the front and inside pages of this morning's Echo. What happened yesterday with regards to social media? Well, you probably are well aware of it because you got to be using something in there, whether it's Facebook or whether it's Instagram or whether it's WhatsApp or all of the above. But millions, many, many millions of people were locked out of Facebook and Instagram and WhatsApp yesterday. A worldwide crash that wiped 5% off Facebook's shares and indeed hit Ireland, Europe, the UK and the USA. Why? Some kind of a dodgy update, apparently. That's what they're saying. A faulty update to the domain name system. Very technical stuff. We get Pat Phelan to explain it a little later on. But it must have been nice, actually, because imagine people actually last night and from around about 4:30 yesterday afternoon actually got to talk to each other and have conversations with each other and probably had dinner at the table together yesterday and weren't clicking or scrolling on their phones or with one hand scrolling on the phone and then with the two eyes trying to watch a movie, that kind of stuff last night. So that must have been nice. More of those, please. Could we have another couple of crashes? Could we have a weekly crash, maybe? Very therapeutic for many people. And then, of course, all of the papers are talking about the boys in suits yesterday and the girls, too, who were down at the cabinet, Leaside. They went to QCC. They had a photo op on the shaky bridge, which it's ironic, really, politicians on a shaky bridge. And then, of course, down to Porkycueve as they launched their big plans, the National Development Plan. Some are paper saying in the papers this morning, the red tops, that it's all pie in the sky. What isn't pie in the sky, of course, is that the city is getting bigger. And there's a bit of a barney going on at the moment now. You know the Kildare-style village that's proposed for Carrigtuil? Well, it's kind of an argument that's split between the Cork City Council and Cork County Council, because Cork City Council has got bigger and bigger. And a judge yesterday granted an application to lift a stay on a direction for local government. And it kind of, I won't get too legally or technically orientated on this, but the judge is kind of saying, where's the effect of, why can't everybody work together? And why can't we just have, you know, the city and the county and business and retail and jobs and people getting more choice? So I don't know whether that moves it a step closer to the 100 million euro outlet village that's proposed for Carrigtuil, but it certainly is ticks one or two boxes for the developers anyway, if nothing else. You heard in the news this morning of visiting restrictions back at St. Luke's Nursing Home because of a small number of residents who've been affected. The big story here is that we want the residents to be safe, and I think that nobody really would have much of an issue with regards to visiting restrictions, and we wish them well trying to contain it and hope that those patients from sorry, all those residents, I should say, get well and that they fully recover. That's the big story there, not as to whether or not people can go in my book. But anyway, the Independent then talks about protection is weakening now, they're saying, with regards to vaccine jabs. And it's not unlike flu, really, in that regard. You need the boosters for it. That's why it's a front page in the Indo today, saying boosters for adults are on the cards as jabs. The jab protection is weakening. And of course, they'll start with the immunosuppressed and the vulnerable and those in nursing care facilities and the elderly. And then they'll work away from there. Papers also talk today of many scams. Apparently, one of the latest ones that's doing the rounds now is people who are being defrauded of significant amounts of money because criminals are pretending to be your solicitor. And they're sending you emails pretending to be from your solicitor. And it looks like an email from your solicitor. It's got their colours and their logos and everything. But if they're asking you, if anyone's asking you to move money from your bank account, it's a scam, full stop. It's just a scam, simple as. That's a front one, front makes the front page of this morning's Examiner. But I love this story. Sive, John B. Keane's first play, has been discovered. The original copy of Sive, written by John B. Keane, has been discovered in a house in Cork, a derelict house in Cork. And it was at the, and I won't go into the storyline of it, I wouldn't have time right now, but it was his very first production, and apparently it was staged first in 1959. I just think it's a lovely story. The things that people have in their attics or up the chimney, it's amazing. Another one includes Paddy O'Brien today with regards to a story that I'll be dealing with later on this morning, and that's energy increases and pensions and the elderly afraid of being in the cold and the dark this winter. And that's a story from The Echo today. And apparently this could have big ramifications for us as a country. Our corporation tax will probably go from 12.5% to 15%. No matter what kind of a spin politicians put on this, that's not good news when it comes to trying to tempt companies to come and open in Ireland, particularly American companies. And of course, we're completely S-H-A-G-G-E-D if America also has a corporation tax going forward of 15%. Why would they bother coming here? And why would they even stay here? That's a story that makes this morning's Times. And you know the big blitz that they did in the UK trying to get HGV drivers to come over from Europe and drive their trucks? They got 27 job applications, according to the Times UK. And if you notice any kind of, and I should have mentioned this with scams, although it's not a scam, if you notice any kind of suspicious bank activity or credit card or debit card activity, it may not be you. It could be your son or it could be your daughter. There could have been some stage in your life when you gave them that number and they're tipping away at it from time to time unbeknownst to you behind the, below the radar. And they're figuring that more than half of children go online shopping or on shopping sprees with mam or dad's cards or online accounts. Apparently, they're siphoning away €351 on average a year on games, apps, and films, and also buying stuff online. But I suppose if you have it, that extra few bob, and you don't miss it, then what's the harm in kids using it from time to time? And James Bond makes all of the papers today. Live and Let Die is more like Live and Let Dough, because it made $1.5 million so far at the Irish box office and $21 million across the weekend in worldwide takings. So big money being made on the latest Bond movie. And interestingly, I was just chatting with Colm O'Sullivan there. He came up with a great idea. He's going to watch Bond later on, and he's going with his dad, fair play to him. And they're going down to the Regal in Yall. And I had intended going to Bond over the next few days, and I'm going to go to the Regal in Yall. I've never been there, but they pumped huge money into it, and it's a classic cinema, really old world style stuff. So that's where I'm going to go, and maybe you might be encouraged to do so yourself. I think you got a book to go to the cinema. Don't be rocking up there. And then Captain Kirk makes the papers today. He's going into space at the age of 90, 55 years after he hung up his Captain Kirk uniform. William Shatner is going into space and will be on Jeff Bezos' Blue Origin rocket ship. Why not? I can't think of anybody else more deserving of going into space than Captain Kirk. Apart from me, that is.
The Neil Prendeville Show.
I know, but they say I'm a bit of a spacer anyway. Lines open at 1-850-104-106. You can text 086-8104-106. Pick up the phone on 1-850-104-106. Let's find out what happened yesterday with your Facebook, with your Instagram, with your WhatsApp. Why did all three go down? Well, they're all owned by the one company. I'm going to talk with Pat Phelan. We won't get too technical about it. We'll keep the ball on the ground. But Pat Phelan is the internet security expert, entrepreneur, and avid social media user. He joins me by phone. Pat, good morning.
Morning, Neil. How are you?
I'm good, my man. I'm good. Without getting overly technical, what happened yesterday?
Okay. So there's a thing runs the backbone of the internet called DNS. And DNS is like, if you can imagine a phone book, and it's your phone book for the internet, and every website in the world is inside and it's in every server, and Facebook lost their phone book yesterday. So there was an update to a server, and it meant that none of their sites could be reached. So if you think about it, the average user types in hotmail.com into their browser, that then DNS then translates that to an internet number, and it finds the website wherever it is in the world.
So in layman's terms, in my terms, it was a dodgy upgrade or update, was it?
Absolutely, 100%. Someone done engineering, and Facebook runs this crazy internal network. It took the whole network off, so they couldn't get into their offices. They couldn't get into their servers. It just took everyone offline.
And how do you think people around the world reacted to this when they couldn't get into their Facebook? From what? About 4:15 until sometime last night, was it?
I think it was almost midnight, actually. I think it was probably up and down probably for about 8 hours. Well, it was funny. Like, Twitter immediately probably surged.
Now, why didn't Twitter go down now, Pat?
Well, Twitter is on its own network. It's on its own backbone. Like, it was getting a little bit flaky in the end, but it held up very well. You know, but like 10 years ago, Twitter used to have a real big stability problem. And they solved that. They're running a different type of backbone.
Is it because it's a different company, maybe?
Totally different company. Everything else held up well. Although, I know Vodafone had problems yesterday. Verizon, the carrier globally, had problems. AT&T had problems. So like, I think what happens is when there's so much DNS down, there probably tends to be compression of traffic, you know?
But, I mean, what did people do when they didn't have their Facebook, their Instagram, their WhatsApp?
We'd on Netflix.
They started talking to each other, is it?
I think figured out how to use SMS again. But I think, like, what was super interesting about this, it just tells you the power of Instagram and Facebook. Like, I was reading this morning from the New York Times, all non-Amazon e-commerce was down 30% globally yesterday.
Wow, like, as in online shopping?
Yeah, 30%. And Facebook itself lost $50 billion in stock value yesterday.
Mother of God, something like 5% off its share value. But that,
yeah,
but
that,
I mean, there was a time yesterday afternoon when I was thinking that it was a cyber attack. Were you thinking like that at any stage?
I think probably Facebook have probably 5,000 to 10,000 people in that division. So they're probably covered. But the one thing that was really amazing yesterday, and it was the first time it stood up for me really, that if you were to look at the numbers using the messaging services, so WhatsApp and Facebook Messenger, there was 3 billion people yesterday that lost the ability to communicate. Half the world's population lost all their messaging tools. Because if you think about it, someone's in Ireland and their brother's in Pakistan or their brother's in Bangladesh, that's gone. They're not going to start sending overseas SMS. So they lost all their comms yesterday, half the planet, for 8 hours. And it tells you the strength that big tech has now brought along.
It tells you the reliance on it, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So it was a tough day for people. And, you know, I've had these outages in the past myself with servers, etc. And, you know, it'll be a long period of introspection for Facebook.
We did a poll yesterday. If you could never again access Facebook and Instagram and WhatsApp, would you be happy or sad? 62% of just under 1,000 people who voted, 62% said they would be happy if they could never access Facebook, Instagram and WhatsApp again. What is that telling you?
That's the easiest thing in the world. Like, that's a kind of a self-choice. Just delete it from your phone. At the start, keep it on your computer and work your way backwards and allocate only specific times. But like, I mean, WhatsApp is probably the toughest one I have because it demands so much time.
But WhatsApp is just replacing texting, isn't it? It's Facebook and Instagram. It's Facebook and Instagram are the addictive ones, surely, aren't they? Not your WhatsApp.
Well, for me, I'm probably in 20 different groups. Some of those groups, like the Sisu team, there's almost 100 people in the Sisu team. So you can imagine inside the C2 team alone, getting 100 messages every four hours.
And we'd be the same. We'd have a WhatsApp group for the program as well, and that's a pain in the ass, that's for sure. But that affects business and work and things like that. But 62% of people say that they'd be happy never to have Facebook, Instagram again. It's because they probably feel that they spend too much time on it. I mean, if you just look at people these days as you go about, they're all stuck in phones.
I agree. I think, I think me and you spoke about this a few years ago where I thought it would have been here by now, but I thought people would have been seriously limiting their time on mobile phones. But now I see, I see kids now with iPads and it's getting younger and younger and younger. So the habit is forming earlier.
And that's a worry though, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, it just tells you, I'm not sure what sport numbers are like, so I presume in children, but I presume they're dropping.
Sport goes down, and couch surfing.
And the screen goes up.
Or screen time goes up. That's interesting, actually. I think that, I'm going to read out some of the texts. I think it would be the best thing in the world to go back to old life, says Niamh. Yesterday would have been a time when people could have maybe taken stock of their life, maybe, and said, okay.
But I think the problem is old life or new life. New life is here to stay, and the amount of our jobs that are dependent on this technology now, and how the internet has changed everything, and we're not going backwards.
But Instagram is a happy place, isn't it? Albeit very fake. Twitter is a nasty place, isn't it? Not quite sure how I'd categorize Facebook. How would you categorize it? Would you agree with my categorizations? Nasty for Twitter?
I think you'd probably need a stab vest for Twitter.
Yeah.
I know I get a good hassle on there regular, but yeah. I'd be fairly outspoken, so it wouldn't bother me much. I think Facebook is kind of for families. If I was to categorize the three of them, I'd say Facebook for families, Twitter for shouting, and it's Instagram for showing off.
And isn't that a worry, Instagram? You say for showing off, I say fake, where people are looking at other people's fake lives and it's bringing them down mentally.
But I think at the end of the day, if you were to look at the amount of fakeness on Instagram, it's pretty easy to see through it pretty quickly.
But how do you know that? I mean, you might be able to see through it very quickly. Other people might crave it and get depressed because they don't have it. They see people's lifestyles or the money that they have or the places they go. Fake photographs, doctored photographs, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Filters everywhere. Everywhere.
And they could.
But I do think that people are smart enough to see that. And I do think that probably the more realer influencers are starting to move away from that as well and become much more genuine.
Why?
I think that they see there's a pushback against it. And I think if you were to look at, the real horrible corners of the internet, places like Tattle Life, which is one people don't talk about enough, where, there is horrific comments about people's lives online and attacking people online. I think
they go after individuals, and it becomes like a bang mob.
It's a pylon. It's online bullying, And I think the people who see that are now coming to understand it. This level of fake Instagramming and filters, etc., that people are demanding more real.
But how can that be tackled where they go after an individual and they attack and they shred and they tear that person apart? Are they protected or are they immune to prosecution? Can they not be shut down or would they just migrate and start again?
Well, I think the problem is finding them, Tattle and things like that are very anonymized.
Even though much of what they're saying are lies, perhaps, yeah?
Absolute lies. I mean, I looked at one the other day, someone pointed one out to me and it was horrific and it was about someone I know well and it was total lies, but it's anonymized. So John 427 from Cork, nobody knows who that person is. It's on a remote server, almost impossible to track. It's like if I was to talk about the internet and favors being asked of me, probably 9 of the 10 favours, you know, because of my background, are asked, you know, is there any way I could track down who this is? They're talking about me online.
And can you?
Sometimes. Sometimes I tracked down one. I tracked down one last year who was trying to do a destructive job on my business.
What do you do then? I mean, how much of that can you share with me? What do you do when you found out whom that person was?
I rolled up to their house anyway.
So you eyeballed them?
Yeah.
How'd that go down?
Difficult.
Did it stop?
It stopped instantly. Then we had another one from a competitor who was putting up fake reviews, and that's a big one for businesses, as you know.
Yes,
like we're insanely proud of, you know, whatever, 6,000 five stars, and a competitor started putting up fake profiles, and I sent them an email. They sent me back one, and they had their IP address in the email. And again, all the IP addresses are fully trackable.
And do you just let it go then when something like that happens, or would you take legal action?
Well, I wouldn't take legal action, but I'd make a phone call and say, this stops now, you know.
Or else, yeah.
Or else I'll just call her out online. I think I called one of them out last year.
And you don't mind the pushback that you get, no, because you have a tough skin?
Well, it's not that I don't mind it, it's that I understand that if it's anonymous, it means nothing to me.
People,
I just feel if you have anything to say to someone, say it to their face, and if it's anonymous, it's anonymous, and then there's no impact to me.
Not on you, but kids aren't smart enough, you see. Teenagers wouldn't have the life skills to be able to deal with that kind of thing in their lives, you know, nor would teenagers have the ability to know what's fake and what's real. And I think that's why
we have to coach our kids, and that's why we have to try to tell them, you know, that anonymous feedback is just that. It's bullying. It's to be ignored, and there's been some horrific cases. But I think once people have enough self-esteem and you're able to help them with that, that's where I'd be focusing my strengths, rather than focusing tracking down bullies.
Interesting text here. People have a love-hate relationship with social media, Neil. Even though they hate a lot of what's going on there, the fakeness, the trolling, the look at me, I'm brilliant, that kind of stuff. We've all had enough of that element of it. But what last night proved is that we have a major addiction to it when we can't access it. Doesn't that sum it up quite well?
Very well. Great piece of a great text that sums the whole thing up.
Okay, my man, I'll let you get back to the day job. I'm going to read out some of these texts from the polls. Have a good day today, Pat. Thanks for taking the call.
See you later. Bye.
Cheers,
thanks,
pal. Take care, Pat Phelan. So, 62% of you that responded said that if you could never access Facebook, Instagram and WhatsApp again, you would be happier. Only for business purposes and keeping in touch with family far away, says Tracer Cakes. Not happy, not sad, just unperturbed, meaning not bothered. Something else would replace it fairly quickly. I turned off my Facebook and Instagram 3 years ago. Happy out. My neighbours knew more about me than I knew about myself. Another one here. On the fence with this one, Mr. Deglan. Another one. Happy until it's back up and running, and then the frenzy will start again, says Michael. Niamh says, I think it would be the best thing in the world to go back to old life. Another person who turned off, John, says, I turned off Facebook and Instagram 3 years ago. I am happy out. Lots of worried people hoping the content of their WhatsApp groups are not exposed if this turns out to be a hack, says George. Well, it wasn't. I think the point there is never put anything up on WhatsApp that you wouldn't want strangers to see. And if you get anything from people that you don't want, delete it. Darren says, there'll be a baby boom after this. People are starting to interact again with each other. Councillor John Maher says, well, I for one am enjoying the break. And then Shane says, there's some crowd joining Twitter. And interestingly, Emer was telling me there was a very funny post on Twitter last night. I hope you get this. Even I got this. Funny post on Twitter last night. Someone said, for all of you over here on Twitter from Instagram, just in case you haven't already been told today, I'm so proud of you, hon. Oh man, that, well, how many? 1, 2, 3, 4. Those 6 words speak volumes.
This is the Neil Prendeville Show. Tweet the show at Neil Red FM. 104 to 106 Red FM.
Very interestingly, there is a Facebook whistleblower giving evidence in America at the moment, and it's very, very interesting. At the same time, when we had this crash yesterday, and this social media whistleblower is a former employee who revealed herself as Frances Haugen at the age of 37, a data scientist with Facebook, saying things like, "Facebook is tearing society apart. It puts profits over safety." And it goes in, and then the media giant's been under intense fire. It's been a trove of leaked internal documents, you know, just being revealed by this whistleblower and others, who say that Facebook is fully aware that its product is fueling hate, harming children's mental health. I read in the Sunday Times of the weekend that they were accusing Facebook of damaging girls' health, spreading anti-vax hoaxes, disrupting democracy, and letting very important people break the rules. And actually, there's a thing called the Pandora's Papers, actually, that are being leaked at the moment, where they talk of tax avoidance. Not evasion, because evasion is illegal, but avoidance isn't. But still, it's probably morally wrong. And they're showing incidents of hidden wealth and money laundering by some of the world's richest and most influential individuals. So this is a leak of data from the online world, where it shows the 35 former and current world leaders, many celebrities, some of whom they name as Shakira, Elton John and Ringo Starr have all been named, many prime ministers and indeed presidents around the world are engaging in all sorts of, I suppose, not illegal, but certainly morally wrong tax avoidance schemes. And some of them involve Ireland, where you have very, very wealthy people and companies using Ireland for tax avoidance. And one part of the article said that in a building in Dublin, an empty office in a building in Dublin, it is the registered address of more than 800 limited partnerships in an empty office building in Dublin. And that's the kind of thing that's allowing investors around the world to invest in businesses without any exposure, and use this empty office as its headquarters, if you like. I mean, I think it's astonishing stuff. And these are more whistleblowers and leaks that are making the news these days. Anyway, your thoughts on social media, text 0868 104 106. Pick up the phone on 1850 104 106. Now, let's move on. I can come back to that later on. But I ran out of time yesterday, and my apologies to Catherine Ward for not getting an opportunity to congratulate her yesterday. Let me make that right today. So, Catherine, well done.
Thank you.
After 27 years on a provisional license, and and your ninth test, you passed.
Yeah, my ninth test.
Eighth fails, but the ninth was the winner. Well done.
Yeah. Thank you.
Why did it take so long, can I ask you?
Every time I went out on the test, it was like I was full of fear and I was very negative. And this time I was very positive.
And were they telling you the reasons why you were failing?
Yeah, they said the last two times it was coasting, and this time I didn't coast at all.
What's coasting?
Keeping the foot, like, over the clutch.
They can see down to your feet, you see, that's the thing.
Yeah.
So coasting on a couple of occasions, what else?
Yeah, observation as well.
Not looking in your mirrors, is it?
Yeah, not checking the mirrors enough times, like, yeah.
So as soon as you'd fix the mirror problem, you'd end up coasting. As soon as you fixed the coasting problem, what was the next one?
It was really observation on the coast, and like, yeah, and that was all the times I went out.
And would you be very disappointed then when they'd bring you back and say, sorry, not this time?
Very disappointed, yeah.
Now, you're a Dublin lady who's living in Cork, so you knew the Cork roads and everything, did you?
I didn't really, to be honest with you. Like, I haven't drove on these roads, only out doing the lessons, like.
So blame the Cork roads then.
Yeah.
So how did you feel then when you got the good news when you were back to the test centre?
Oh, it was the best feeling in the world. I couldn't believe it, like. Couldn't believe it. I was over the moon.
Because were you feeling at some stage that you were never going to pass this?
Yeah. I was nearly starting to give up.
And were you getting many lessons?
I got probably four or five lessons every time before I went out to do it, like. And yeah, the same this time, like, But I went out this time with a positive mind, like, to know that I will get it. Like,
I think you went to see and get some lessons from Darren Millan, didn't you?
I did, yeah.
We've spoken to Darren in the past, and he solved a lot of, you know, issues with people and bad habits and got them across the line just like you. Darren, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. How are you?
I'm good, my man. Thank you so much for taking the call. How long did you spend with Catherine?
I'd say 5 to 6 hours. Catherine was an excellent driver, but just small habits like coasting and not checking her mirrors coming off a roundabout. And she's an inspiration for people. There's 850 people at the moment on a learner permit over 20 years. And that's according to RSA statistics. And she's an inspiration for them. And I'm delighted she passed the driving test.
When did you first apply for the full license, Catherine, or for the test, if you're 27 years and a provisional? How far back does it go?
I'd say I had my provision for about 2 years.
So 25 years ago, you first took the test?
Yeah, the test, yeah.
Is it any wonder why you didn't just give up?
I know. No, I had it in my mind this year. I want to get my license. I'm getting my license.
And what do you mean when you said you changed your mindset? How did that work?
I was very negative going out on, you know, when I was going out to sit the test. And this time I was like, I can do this. I'm getting it. No, and I was telling myself all this. Even the morning of the test, I remember getting up and saying a prayer, and I was actually saying, you're getting your license today. And it was just really changing my mindset.
And you didn't hover over the clutch, and you looked in all your mirrors.
I did. I didn't do any of the mistakes.
And you didn't hit any curb, or you didn't drive through a roundabout without giving way on the right.
No.
And you reversed, and you reversed around the corner, did you?
I reversed around the corner, yeah.
I hate that. Darren.
Yeah, Neil.
What are the biggest mistakes people make? Is that it? Mirrors? And because we all hover over the clutch unless we have an automatic car, an electric car.
It's not hovering over the clutch. It would be pressing in the clutch and travelling a distance of over 2.5 car lengths. So basically it would be pressing in the clutch before you come up to the lights or pressing in the clutch while you're turning left and right.
That's very technical, isn't it? That's bad form. We all do
it
that.
It increases your stopping distance, so there is definitely a safety issue there.
So you need to brake first, is it?
Yeah. A lot of people that are on learner permits, right, from my experience, I'm seeing a lot of learner permits that are like 15, 20 years, right? And a lot of the time, people just don't put in the effort. They take one lesson the day before the test, they go in. Other people then are very nervous. Now, I can honestly say we have the most compassionate driving testers out in that test centre in Wilton and in the Bears. They understand that people are nervous and they'll do everything in their power to put these people at ease. But at the end of the day, they have a job to do.
No, if you're nervous and make a mistake, you don't get any dispensation for that. It's still a mistake.
You don't get any dispensation for making the mistake. But they do understand and they will try to put you as much at ease as they can.
Did you pick up nerves from Catherine when you gave her the lessons?
I did, but in Catherine's case, Catherine was an excellent driver. Catherine just needed a small bit of guiding. So, like, when I'd done a driving test with Catherine first, coasting, not checking her mirrors coming off roundabouts, and blind spots moving off. Like, Catherine, I think, only had 6 hours, and she walked the driving test.
Not a bother.
Not a problem to her, and I was delighted she went through it.
Do you eventually run out of provisional licences, lads? Can you just keep applying for them?
You can keep applying. You can get a licence every... For your first licence, you get a 2-year licence. After your first 4 years, you have to apply for a driving test to get your licence renewed.
Yeah.
For your third one, then you get a year. Now, Catherine was on a learner permit since 1994. So she would have been 27 years on a learner permit. But, like, you can keep applying once you apply for the driving test. You can keep applying for your learner permit.
And what difference will this make in her life now, having a full licence? Is the only benefit that her insurance will come down, is it?
Well, I would imagine, like, she has a full licence. She's been certified as a safe, competent driver. And I suppose when she comes into a garda checkpoint, so she'll have no worries.
Why? Yeah. What would they be? What do they say to you when they say anything to Catherine? They won't know how many provisionals you've had.
Well, I couldn't drive the last 2 years. I couldn't drive because the insurance company told me that I have the license so long that I need to get the full license.
Oh, so you were technically off the road then?
Yeah.
Yeah, insurance companies now are starting to refuse to insure people that are staying on learner permits for a significant number of years.
Okay, so that reverses and your insurance comes down.
Yeah.
And would you, like, would guards ever have said anything to you at checkpoints about the, you know, you're not supposed to be, are you technically an L driver? You can't drive without a full license with you kind of thing?
Yeah, well, I shouldn't be on the road, like, unless I have a full license driver beside me, like, you know, so I wouldn't, like, if I had an accident or anything, you wouldn't be insured unless the full license driver was with you.
Okay, so it's freedom, really, in a word, isn't it? It's freedom.
Yeah, absolutely. And now I'm living in Cork and I walk here. I need my car, like, because I'm out in, like, it's rural where we are, like.
You can drive wherever you want, whenever you want, with whoever you want. Delighted for you.
Exactly.
Catherine, well done. Congratulations. After 27 years and your ninth test, you didn't give up.
Yeah, no, I didn't give up.
Look after yourself. Thanks for taking the call. Cheers.
Thank you.
Cheers. Take care. Catherine Ward. So, Darren, those are the, I'm just curious, just one or two other bad habits that we have while driving. What else do you pick up on? Do you ever see the people who actually take the car out of gear and freewheel?
That would be a common fault. The three most common areas of failing a driving test would be failure to give proper observation moving off, basically failing to check your blind spot. You're pulled in four times during the test, so you're pulled in before you do the reverse around the corner. You have to check your blind spot moving off. You have to check your blind spot moving off after the reverse. You have to check your blind spot moving off on the hill start. And you have to check your blind spot moving off after your three-point turn. So, if you fail to check those blind spots four times, then that's a fail.
Yeah, but I've also heard of people who have failed because they overused the mirrors. Or they were, I don't know what the right term is. Is it overly cautious?
Well, overusing the mirrors would be a reaction to hazard's fault, okay? So basically, someone that's overusing their mirrors is taking their eyes off the road in front of them. So, like, you'd only check your left mirror while turning left, right mirror while turning right. So basically, people that are checking their mirrors consistently, going driving down the straight road and they're looking at the left mirror and looking at the right mirror, therefore, they're taking their eyes off the road.
That's what they mean by overusing the mirrors, like thinking that you're doing the right thing. I've got to check my mirrors loads of times.
Another thing would be looking down at the gear stick while they're changing gears. Every time you do that, you'll get marked for reaction to hazards as well.
Really?
Because you're taking your eyes off the road to look down at the gear stick when it's not necessary.
Probably be better off in an automatic car then, wouldn't you? You'd have no issue with the clutch, you'd have no issue with the gears, and you could really just concentrate on not crashing.
A lot of drivers that take the, like, I'm not saying take the easy way out, but a lot of drivers go for automatic thinking it's an easy test. But, like, unless you're stalling constantly, you know, like, it's still the same driving test. You still have to take the same observation.
If you stall the car in a test, is it game over then, is it?
Absolutely not. You'd have to stall probably six times during the test before you'd fail. You know, like, there's a grade one, grade two, and a grade three fault. And, like, if you stall a car and it's insignificant and it doesn't delay anyone, I would imagine it's only a grade one fault.
Okay. And what is the one fault that automatically fails you when you go straight back to the test centre?
A grade three fault would be, like, running a red light, pulling out in front of a car at a roundabout.
Because if you run a red light on the test...
It happens. We have a roundabout down from the test centre in Wilton, right? Take the third exit out there, South Link Road. And I see five people a week going through the red light at the roundabout because they're too busy checking their mirror and they're too busy checking their blind spot. They don't actually see the red light on the roundabout. Down at the Sarsfields Road roundabout when you're taking the third exit to go to Link.
So running a red light, what else did you say?
Running a red light and failing to check while moving off. Like, for example, if you move off from the hill start and you don't check your mirror and you don't check your blind spot, that would be a grade three fault.
And what would the tester say?
Nothing. They just continue on with the test and bring you back to the test centre.
Oh, they don't just kind of say, okay, this test is over, bring me back.
No. You'd have to be a danger. You'd have to have three or four red marks and you'd have to be unsafe on the road before they'd curtail.
Okay, so is there any one fault where you've just failed and that's it? Running a red light?
Running a red light, running a stop line. So it would have to be a dangerous or potentially dangerous fault.
Yeah, gotcha. Because years ago, many, many, many years after I got my full license, I went out with an ex-tester just for the hell of it, to see if I could pass the driving test. This is a person, I suppose about maybe 10 years ago, so I'd have had a full license for what? Maybe 25 years or something. Sat into the car with him, drove out of the Sarsfield Road Test Centre, up to the junction, pulled out, and he said, "You have now failed the driving test." And that that was before I ever got out of the test centre. So it goes to show, you know, we pick up bad habits.
Sure, come on away up to me and we'll give you a few lessons and we'll make sure you're...
And try it again, maybe. That's an idea. I'll do another test and see if I pass or fail. Why not? All right.
Come on away up to me someday and I'll test you and we'll see what way you are.
All right, we'll do it. I'll hold you there. We'll do it next week. Thanks, Darren. Cheers. Take care.
Bye.
Darren Milan from Milan School of Motoring. Well done to him and indeed to Catherine. Can anybody beat that? 27 years on a provisional license and passing on the ninth test, or indeed not passing at all. Text 0868104106.
Call the Neil Prendeville Show now. 1850-104-106. Red FM.
Okay, lines open at 1850-104-106. Yesterday we spoke to Louise, whose close family member was viciously assaulted in a hammer attack around the head and face in Corraheen on Saturday night. And Louise was telling us that those that were doing the attack at one stage said, "It's not him, it's not him." But at that stage, of course, they had carried out the attack on the lad and they got back into their car and they sped off. And we spoke yesterday also to Terry, whose 16-year-old friend and his buddies were assaulted on Washington Street 3 weeks ago. So there were very graphic conversations yesterday. Now, a GoFundMe has now been set up after the Corraheen assault on the lad, the hammer attack, if you like. And we have that GoFundMe on Facebook now and also on Twitter at Neil Red FM. And among one of the reasons why is, of course, because all of the dental work on his teeth and other issues like that will have to be paid for by the family. The lad lost all his teeth, broke his nose, broke his jaw, all of that in the hammer attack. It was very sad, actually, because at one stage Louise was saying that he had braces for a long, long time because he was proud of his teeth and wanted to get them right. And he was very proud of the work that the braces achieved and his new smile. And of course, now that is all gone. And to a young lad, of course, it's a real setback psychologically. So we need to do all we can to help him on the road to recovery. And of course, the guards need to get on and do their job now, hopefully, and find these people. And it's also, the case in Washington Street is different because they know of the group in Washington Street who attacked the lads and, you know, did fierce damage to a young lad's face. He had been at the Gate Cinema and was walking down Washington Street with his pals. Just an unprovoked attack. I may well come back to that a little later on this morning. But it prompted a call. It prompted a call from Kieran O'Brien. Kieran, good morning.
Good morning, and
I know you were listening and you also saw the post of the attacks that we put up on social media. And you run martial arts self-defense classes, is that right?
I do. I work with a couple of schools around the Cork City area and the Cork County area, like Kinsale Community School now, and a few other schools.
And in the case of those two isolated attacks, the Washington Street one, which was a punch by a guy with a fingers full of big, huge rings, and then the hammer attack in Corraheen, would martial arts have made a difference?
A lot of the time, well, of course, with a weapon attack, that there's no martial arts in the world, unfortunately, can really avoid a hammer, but it might give you a couple of basic things and how to protect your head a little bit, like, you know, like in boxing, you'd keep your hands up and stuff like that. Naturally, we do that anyway. I think if a weapon was coming at us, but it might teach you to have a tighter guard. It might help you to be fitter, actually, to run if you need to run, if that's the...
Would you see a sucker punch coming?
In martial arts, well, no, of course not. For the soccer punch, it's a soccer punch, but, you know, at the end of the day, I think everyone should learn martial arts and do martial arts, and it will definitely give them an understanding and bring a bit more awareness of when these things are going to happen.
Well, it can only help, can't it, in fairness?
Oh, of course, you could see you could see someone's body language changing, you know, you could see their shoulders start to turn, and if you're training, you'd obviously get those reads on it, and it might help you avoid that situation.
Do you do any kind of psychological studies within martial arts as to why somebody would attack another human being with a hammer?
I haven't studied it myself, preferably, but I am interested in the psychology about martial arts and about competing and stuff like that. No, I don't understand why someone would want to do that. Obviously, they have a lot of issues themselves that they need to work out. But when it comes to martial arts, it definitely helps people. They're psychologically strong. It makes them more confident and things like that. I think if this is in our schools and in our youth, I think we'd have a lot less people wanting to go around attacking people with weapons and stuff like that, because it would make them more disciplined, it would make them more understanding on what the consequences are when they hurt someone. And I think that's a big thing. That's why I'm actually working with a couple of schools to get it in early with people, to get into the teenagers, so they understand the consequences of bullying, of attacking people, and how to avoid these things.
And do you go in during school hours and do a class in secondary schools?
I do. I work with transition years. I work with Kinsale, maybe Kinsale Community School. I think I've been working there maybe 11 years, and a few other schools in the Fermoy area and in Cork City area as well, inside the city.
And where's the gym?
We're based in Centre Park Road, right across from the Marina Market.
I know it. I know your building. I've seen your building, Samsung, on the Centre Park. I know it. Yeah, I've seen
it. That's as well. Yeah, yeah. It's nice when you walk past the marina, you can't really miss it.
You can't really miss it, absolutely.
Sorry,
go ahead, yeah.
We work with from the ages of five up. We only started our junior classes again this week. Thankfully, since the restrictions have been kind of brought down, so we started our junior program again. It's always been very highly successful in the gym, and you see the massive positive effect it has on the kids. It really brings them out of their shells. You know, it gives them great confidence. It gives them great structure for discipline. And then when they go off to another sport, like team sports, they just have a great drive and they have a great push for other things because of the kind of discipline that the martial arts are kind of teaching.
And these are boys and girls that you're training, right?
Yeah, boys and girls.
Good, good. Okay. And I think you got in touch because you wanted to offer the lads and their pals a few free lessons. Is that right?
Yeah, I just caught the end of the segment yesterday. I went back and I listened to the podcast, and it was terrible to hear that because...
Unbelievable.
It's very sad. They're very sad to hear. But yeah, so, I just like to offer I think there was four lads that were there. I know one of them was mainly attacked by, like, that for all the lads that were there on the day, if they'd like to come down maybe for a month or two there and give the gym a free trial there. And we have a couple of different martial arts, like the kickboxing, the boxing, the MMA, which is very popular at the moment. And of course, myself, I'd like to work with them just to run over a few steps to fell.
I think that's great. I'm going to put you in touch with them. I'm going to get on to them and swap numbers and what have you, and then they can pick it up from there. Just very, very quickly, why did you get into it?
Basically, I suppose I wasn't living in the most roughest area in the city, but growing up in a certain part of the city, I suppose I knew I had to kind of, when I was going to school, there was people like that, there was bullies and stuff like that, and martial arts was always a bit of an interest in my family anyway, so naturally I was going to go down that path. But as soon as I did, it really helped my confidence, and it really helped my mental health as well, like that. And as long as I felt there was a positive outlook on me, I just wanted to help other people then. Okay.
And have you ever, I mean, I don't know whether this is something you wish to answer, but have you ever had to use your skills?
Thankfully, no. A lot of times I avoid that situation, I think. I don't know, is it because I suppose I used to compete in martial arts, and I'd have a small bit of a rep, so a lot of people would know me locally and stuff like that.
Yeah, but even if they weren't to know you, you would feel an awful lot more confident in yourself, though, wouldn't you? Knowing that you had a way of protecting yourself.
100%. No, I did. I used to work in a bar scene years ago, in a nightclub scene. I was in security. I used to work on the bar stuff, but I didn't have that nerves and anxiety.
Yes,
I think a lot of people would have.
Yeah, it's a comfort.
If something would kick off, you know, I knew in the back of my head, look, I have a few things to get me safe here if I need to do this, and, you know, hopefully I won't have to do that. And again, the great thing about martial arts, everyone thinks it's about punching and kicking each other and hurting each other. It's not. It's about control, and a lot of the martial arts we teach, like, it's all about being able to grab someone and maybe hold them down and pin them without having to bloody punch them and,
gotcha,
you know, knock them down.
Absolutely.
That's what we want to teach, is just complete control and discipline with all the techniques. You know?
All right. Well, continued success with that, Kieran. I'll pass on your details, and thanks for that offer. I hope the lads pick up on it, and anybody that wants to get in touch with you, Samson Martial Arts on Facebook and on Instagram, spelled SAMSON. Have a good day. Thanks, Kieran. Cheers.
Hi, it's Connor. Join me Sunday from 7 for Green on Red, bringing you the biggest, the best, and newest names in Irish music.
Get it off your chest. Text the Neil Prendeville Show now. 086-8104-106. Red FM.
Back to calls in a few minutes' time, but just some emails and texts. I heard a woman on the radio, this is from yesterday's program, about her son being stabbed. My brother was stabbed Saturday night. to the face. He's destroyed and will need plastic surgery. My aunt heard of some organizations that help to pay after a stabbing. Do you know who they are? Well, there is a compensation board, which is run by the state, actually, that will pick up some of the tab. You have to pay out first and then get it back afterwards on the production of receipts. I will just double check and find out the contact link to that. I'm sorry for your troubles, and it's an awful question to be asking. But I hope that your son makes a full recovery. And as soon as I get that information, I'll pass it on to you. And there's many more then with regards to the events on yesterday's programme, whether it was the trains or the city. I fail to understand as to how the Gardaí could say to that man's partner to sit down after an assault on her 10-day-old baby occurred, says Shiona. Well, that's the story she told yesterday. This was on the train where somebody threw a Bulmer's glass bottle and it smashed. And the little 10-day-old baby was in the little car buggy, you know, the little car seat, and it smashed off the corner of it and glass went everywhere. This is not me having a go at the Garda Síochána. I'm just passing on the stories. I've been accused the last few days of Garda bashing, which is the furthest thing from my mind. There should be no drinks on trains, full stop, Neil. My 12-year-old son would have been on the 4 o'clock train from Houston. If anything would have happened to him because of some drunk or druggy, I wouldn't be responsible for my own actions. If you're going to allow drinks on trains, then there should be police officer on the train or at least private security. Just wondering, Dennis says, have you travelled on the train from Cork to Dublin recently? Not in a while, actually. It's been at least a few years. He says, the toilets are filthy. They're nothing like, they're nothing more than open sewers, says Dennis, the train from Cork to Dublin. Neil, it wasn't a Stanley blade that you referred to in the slashing attack in the city. It was a knife he had. I was sitting on the bus and I witnessed everything. The guy attacked was with a few others opposite Marks and Spencer chatting when a guy walked up to him and tried to take his cigarette. As he tried to get it off him, they started fighting. Both fell to the ground. It's then one of them pulled a knife. The two girlfriends with them started bopping the heads off each other. One of the fellas headed down Paul Street and the other down the Quays. Thank you for that. That's an eyewitness of my bus. On the Washington Street attack, tell the family who was advised by the detective not to proceed with the charges to go to GSOC. Watch the guard's attitude then, says Pat. I'm reading that out, slow enough as I am to read it out. I'm reading it out nonetheless because I'd say it must be very difficult to be a guard these days with the threat of GSOC hanging over their heads all of the time from people who probably use that as a threat. So that must be tough for guards these days. Morning, I'm a 28-year-old woman and I wouldn't go into town shopping if you paid me. If I got it for free, the place has gone to the dogs and I'd be afraid what my young son would see. Scary stuff. John says, sounds like the Gardaí must be afraid of some of these guys. It's a joke. Well, certain sections of society seem to believe that they are untouchable, and the guards advise people that there could be repercussions if they do proceed with an assault case. We're chatting with Graham on the air yesterday, who turned his life around. Graham is talking so much sense. Have more of these calls on air. I will do, and I love talking to people who have come through serious addiction and have turned their life around. Morning, it's always the same. People get into drugs from early trauma. They then don't care whether they live or die, which is so, so sad. Well, there's always a reason, isn't there? And there's always a backstory. Graham is so coherent. He definitely understands. We need more people like this, young, recovered addicts, acting as consultants for our traumatized children. He has so much understanding, better than any therapist my beautiful son has ever seen. My son, unfortunately, is addicted to acute anxiety, and it's destroying his life. Coming from childhood trauma, I would love if this young man, Graham, would talk to my son. Absolutely love the show. More stories like this, please. And Catherine says, Graham is absolutely correct in what he says. How do these drugs get into the country? We need higher security at our ports and airports. We're an island nation. Surely we can secure it better. Listening to the comments and calls all morning, and I agree with the texter who said that you appear to be on an anti-guard crusade. A lot of your commentary lately seems to be taking a pop at the guards. In fairness, they do a dangerous, thankless job and deserve our support and not endless criticism, says Mags. And you've never heard me saying that, have you? You've never, if you listen regularly, heard me talk about the fact that guards do a dangerous, thankless job and deserve our support? In an effort to be fair and balanced, I believe that I have said that in the past on numerous occasions. Mind you, a serving member of the Garda Síochána also says, it's easy for you to be a hurler on the ditch. You seem to have all of the answers. From a serving member of the Garda Síochána. I can only assume that people who, and you're entitled to these texts. I mean, I'm quite happy reading them out, But I can only assume from texts like that that maybe people aren't listening often enough or long enough. So I would encourage you to listen more. So there's that and lots more besides. I'll come back to text 0868104106. Just to clarify, the Corraheen assault on Saturday night happened near the bus stop, not near Corraheen Estate, which is about 5 minutes away. I've been asked to clarify that by a resident of the estate, and I'm happy to do so. But you remember it was the text there said more of these kind of uplifting stories who have come back from trauma or addictions in their life. And we've been talking a lot for the last week in particular about addictions and our perceptions of addicts. I'd also spoken with people who have come back from it and turned their life around. And I think maybe four or five of those calls in the last week alone. But one man who has recovered from addiction himself and is now hiring ex-addicts at his car valeting business at the Marina Commercial Park is the one and only Timmy Long. And Timmy is part of the Two Norries podcast, which is absolutely flying as a podcast. And I'd encourage you to check it out on a regular basis. He joins me by phone. Timmy, good morning.
Morning, Neil. How are you?
Great to catch up again, pal. Listen, can you solve a riddle for me, right? Because we were chatting here yesterday amongst ourselves. Is it a car valet or a car valet? Which is it?
A valet.
A valet, you say?
Like, yeah, we wash cars.
No, but you know the difference interior. In the words. Like a valet then is somebody who works and maybe does work around the hotel lobby, and a valet is people who clean and do up, bring cars back to life. Is that it? A valet?
You probably know more about that now than me, Neil, like that.
Because I've always wondered which word it was. But anyway, so now we know it's valet. Are you on speakerphone, Timmy?
No, I'm on the handheld.
All right, okay. Listen, I know we spoke in the past, and it's great to hear that things are flying for you. What are you doing now? I didn't even know you had that many businesses. Fair play. Tell us about it.
We just started a car washing valeting company below the Marina Commercial Park. We're just trying to help people that would have had similar experiences in life to myself.
And James?
Help them. And James, yeah. And just integrate them back into the workforce and just give them whatever services they need to be able to get by, you know. And that means being around other people that are in recovery from alcohol and drugs and gambling or whatever it may be, so they can talk to them. It's like an AA meeting for 8 hours a day, where if you're having a bit of a struggle or whatever's going on for you, you can start just chatting to your colleague or whatever it is. And it works like that. You know, it works very well, you know, especially when you have people that would have had similar backgrounds and they share the same energy, you know. So it works very, very well.
So you would have six people in recovery, is that it? Working together?
Yeah.
And you get and working together then of like is like ongoing therapy to keep the wheels on the ground.
Mm. Yeah, there is, because you see the whole process of recovery, Neil, is you're recovering from a lot of difficulties you may have had as well in childhood and stuff like that in your adult life and during your addiction. There might be social issues, you know, there might be anxiety, all these different things. You know, you can't just walk into a workforce like and be somebody that doesn't talk to other people. You don't have conversations with them, and then you're anxious to talk to people, clients, you know, and stuff like that. So what we do is we just give people the bit of space to go on their own terms and just, when they're ready, start talking to the customers. But it's a process. Like,
at their own pace, like.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, you know, when, say, people come back from and recover from addictions and they're on the road to recovery and it's an ongoing one and they're clean, but the social issues that they had before it are the anxieties you described or the trauma that was in their lives from the past, that's still with them, like, isn't it?
Of course. And we always recommend some form of external service, you know, like seeing a psychotherapist or a counsellor and just visiting some of the stuff that we blocked out through alcohol and drugs and gambling and all the other addictions.
Yeah.
And that's the whole, that is the recovery process in my eyes. Recovery is recovering from your life experiences and influences and stuff like that. It's not just about being in recovery from alcohol and drugs in terms of being absent from it. It's about dealing with whatever demons you have in your past and It may be anger, maybe fear, shame, guilt, it may be self-esteem issues, confidence issues, you know, all these different things. And when you become aware of them and they start happening in your daily life, you know, you can trace them back to where they came from and say, you know what, that's not me anymore. I'm different today.
That's incredible what you just said there. That's absolutely powerful, because I have spoken on numerous occasions in the past to people who went into therapy or went into treatment and they did 3 months. And one story is quite personal to me. I won't go into it in too much detail, but of an individual who went into treatment for 3 months on 3 different occasions and unfortunately found, has now passed away subsequently, very sadly, but subsequently found when having come out of, say, a 3 month stint, if you like, and in some cases gone into step down for a month or whatever, after all of that, was left all alone, you know, floundering. And it wasn't long before the addictions resurfaced again, you know?
Being part of some form of community in when you stop using alcohol and drugs, nobody can do this on their own, no one, without having... Well, you can stop with, like, there's... You could have severe mental health issues then, because you're caught up in your head, you're not speaking to anybody. It's very important to have some form of social interaction with others that are in recovery from alcohol and drugs. And are in recovery in general, I believe every person should have some form of recovery in their life, whether they're an alcoholic, drug addict, whatever. They may not even have an addiction, but we all need to let off some steam in somewhere. We all need to talk to somebody about different things that have went down in our lives, that there might be some still, there might be in a trapped emotion, a trapped energy from our past, you know. Yeah. For instance, something may have happened as a young child and you know, even being bitten by a dog, and you go through your lives then being scared of dogs because of that one moment, you know. It's similar for other things. It's just we need to grow as well, and we need to move on from all these different things that stop us from actually becoming who we were supposed to be.
I know we discussed your own scenario in the past, and maybe not everybody would have heard it because they listen from time to time, but you're clean 10 years now. How do you, like, but tell us your backstory again.
I would have been addicted to alcohol and drugs from a really young age, you know. It was just chaotic. It was just mad. I didn't really care about, you spoke about your, before I came on, you spoke about one guy talking about he didn't care whether he lived or died or whatever. It's you see, when you're living for on a daily basis to get completely out of your head because you can't deal with the emotions that are going on for you, and you can't deal with people, and you can't see the beauty of nature, you can't see the beauty of people. Like, you're not one to go into exist within fucking any form of community or anything.
And how were you able to cry stop?
For me, stop was I was at my bottom. I was hitting the bottom. Like, I just wanted to die, basically. And I had 2 kids at this stage, and everybody around me was basically, they didn't ever give up on me, but they were basically, I was after hurting everybody at that stage, and you know, they didn't want to be hurt anymore. And I needed that to happen because I needed to feel that loneliness, that lonely feeling that, listening, everybody around, you know, was after having enough of you. And I remember walking the streets one night crying, just looking for somewhere to stay, really, because a lot of convictions from the guard was going to prison, you know. My mental health was gone. I was completely paranoid and destroyed, basically. And I just asked for help. I went to my local doctor, and my doctor put me onto a counsellor. And the counsellor put me into pre-treatment for Table Lodge. And I went and I done that. And I went to Table Lodge, and I came out of Table Lodge. And I was able to live with my family for 2 weeks before I went to prison for a 5-year sentence.
Crikey.
And I just kept going while I was in prison. I kept working with the AA inside the prison, the psychologist in the prison, the drug counselor. I kept doing all the personal development groups, all these different things just to help me to grow, to understand myself.
Man, that must have taken incredible strength and bravery, though, you know, inside in jail for a 5-year stretch when you still kept going.
I had to. It was like a waking up period for me. And when I woke up, I realized that, it wasn't about me anymore. I had two young kids that relied on me, and I had a partner at home that loved me, and
oh, I know.
I just had to stop.
Yeah, but on the other hand, then, you can get alcohol in jail, you can get drugs in jail, you can get hardened in jail, and you could have come out worse.
Yeah. There were days, Neil, trust me, I contemplated and taking drugs, and there was times like I would pick the phone up from to my wife Nicole, and I'd kind of like I'd be saying, "Will she just leave me, like, so I can go back using?" And I've no excuse, you know. That's my excuse. Right. I can just, I don't have to do it for anybody, because I did do it for my wife and kids at the beginning, but. No, I wouldn't give it away for all the money in the world.
Now look at you, clean 10 years, podcast is flying, helping people constantly, making a difference. You own your own property maintenance company, employing people in recovery, and the car valeting company as well. And Brian O'Sullivan is one of those that's working with you now, isn't he?
He is, Brian. Brian's a great lad. He came on board there from the beginning, and he's brilliant with the people below. He's brilliant with the lads, you know, and all the clients that come in to get their cars done, you know.
And have a quick word with him. Brian, good morning.
So morning, Neil. How are you?
How's life for you now?
Life is good, Neil. Life is good.
Get up every day now with a job and a purpose?
Yeah, I mean, that's it. I mean, get up, look forward to my day ahead, and come in and vet the cars and wash them all there.
You go home tired?
A small bit.
After a good after day's that. Work?
After a good day's work, and straight home into the shower, and off to a meeting for myself, and get back into the bed again, and same thing the next day, and do it over and over.
And you have buddies down there that you're working alongside, Timmy says, who came through the exact same, well, similar story to your good self.
Yeah, and it's a good thing, because I think people that are not in the same, have the same, had the same experience as myself, I don't think would get me, you know. So we bounce off each other, and no, it makes the day go along.
And do you pick each other up if somebody's having a bad day then as well?
Oh, definitely, definitely.
Kind of bounce off each other?
Bounce off each other, and, you know, just I suppose, you know, like I said, they understand, and I understand where they're coming from, and, you know, it's okay to be down and out, and it's okay to have an issue, because, like I said, we were aware each other are, you know, at some stage in our journey. Like,
do you know any of the lads from your former life, or, you know, where you did you hang out together or what?
I would have crossed paths with some of them, yeah.
So it must be amazing to see the change in them, and the change in you.
Yeah, like I said, like we support each other on, you know. They see me doing well, and I see them doing well in other parts of their life, and we kind of, you know, you can do it, I can do it, and, you know, we spur each other on and bounce off each other.
Yeah, Timmy's very open about his past and very honest. Are you like him? Do you share your story?
I do. I've shared it many times, you know. I suppose I had it, like, in my using, Neil, you know, I've hurt a lot of people in my using, especially those closest to me, you know. But no, you know, these days, like, I want to give back to society and help out in any way I can. And, you know, all I have is my story to share. And, you know, if someone gets something out of my story, then that's job done for me, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And does that story involve heroin?
It does.
Good God, man. That's some battle to come back from, isn't it?
It does. It does, you know. I suppose, you know, drink, drugs, prescribed medication, anything an addict is taking, it kind of brings us all to the same place, you know, at the end of our using, you know, and that's a ball of pain.
A ball of pain.
A trail of destruction.
Yeah. Do you live with shame because of that then, or is that something you come to terms with?
No, I mean, I do have moments of it, but, you know, I'm doing a lot of work around myself at the moment. I'm doing therapy there every week.
You got to leave it behind, don't you?
Yeah, I suppose you got to come to terms with it, you know. And, you know, it pops up now and then, but like that, that's why I attend my meetings, and I share what's going on for me, honestly. And I try to recover from it, you know.
Do either of you have, and congratulations on that, Brian, do either of you have an opinion, either Brian or Timmy, when you walk around the streets and you see the amount of people who are out of it and are described like the walking dead, and then you hear of hammer attacks that are probably is drug related, an innocent attack and got the wrong guy in Corraheen, or the stabbings or the knife attacks or the guy who got hit with a fistful of rings on Washington Street, young boys, do you think it, do either of you have an opinion on that, the futility of it all? Say, Timmy?
Yeah. Sad, Neil. It was completely sad. You know, there's nothing, you know, there's nothing I can say or anybody else can say about what is actually happening on the streets. You know, it's, these things have been happening all the time. You know, it's just happening all the time. I don't know the answers for that. You know, I don't know how to fix it, you know, but it's just sad. It's sad all along for the parents of these young people and the young people themselves, you know, because it will affect them long term. But we need to be looking at some form of way of getting out of these things and talking to young people about the damage that they're causing while they're doing these things, you know. Unfortunately, they don't have that awareness at that age, like, and they're trying to fit into different peer groups and, you know, I don't know, it's a violent time all around there with the amount of drugs that we have in the communities, and I don't know, it's not too much about it. Like,
no, but it's probably about trying to get them not to ever start, isn't it? Not so much stop, but don't start. I mean, you were 10, like, how old were you, Brian?
I suppose when I started, I was a teenager, 13, 14, I think.
And did it go from drink then to other things? Was that the way it started?
Yeah, I think most people's story are kind of the same. Starts with the light stuff of drinking, a bit of hash, but they're only all gateway drugs, you know.
And off you go then to the heavier stuff, and before you know
exactly,
it, your life's imploded around.
Progressing into a downward spiral, Neil.
Yeah. Timmy, do you think more companies should do what you've done?
I think opportunities, like, at the moment, from what I gather, there's a lot of systems being in place by different, like, you've Carp Simon and other charities around the city are really starting to help people in recovery. They're starting to give them courses. They're starting to get them ready for work. We just need more businesses at the moment to start giving people opportunities. And I can tell you this from my own experiences. When I was in early recovery and when I was out of prison, I got an opportunity off a man, you know, to work as a carpenter. And I would have absolutely done anything for him because of his generosity in helping me and giving me a chance. Well, I'm not sure whether he knew my background at that stage, but he gave me a chance, and that meant an awful lot to me.
So it's about giving someone a chance. But I think maybe some companies or some employers might be slow in the sense that they might have an issue with reliability, and then others wouldn't touch anybody with a prison sentence. Sure, they wouldn't.
Well, Neil, you don't have to be a drug addict or somebody that has been to prison for, you know, to do things like that. Normal people can do the same. You know, like, my life is an open book, and Brian's and a lot of us, like, people know what they're getting. You know, we'd have nothing to hide. But when you could get somebody there that has a completely clean record, and, you know, like, and they could be going in cleaning out a company. You know,
correct.
It works in different ways.
Yeah,
you know,
correct,
I mean?
In the sense that your life, that. Yeah, your life and Brian's life is an open book. It's there for all to see. It's honesty.
Yeah, and like, all we want to do is just be integrated back into society where people can get chances. I know we've all done really, really bad things in addiction, and, you know, and it's not right. There's no justification for our actions in addiction, none whatsoever. And I've never come on any radio station or any interview and say, I've done enough, I should forgive from all my past. But it's not about that. It's about just trying to help the people that are coming up. Everybody, every family has somebody caught up in addiction, right? And every single family are going to need a Brian, a Timmy, a James, you know, down the line to be able to help their brother, their sister, their child, you know, because they might be addicted to drugs and they don't know how to turn to, you know. So we need people in recovery as well. We need to...
to be part of it, yeah, absolutely.
We need it because they are the ones that are going to help.
Not talking at you, but talking to you, kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
okay. Just one quick call on this, if you don't mind, just before I let you guys go. Michael Cronin. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Neil.
Where do you get your car valeted?
Well, I've got it washed. I haven't got it validated yet, but I've been down to the lads a few times, and they're absolutely outstanding. Fantastic service. Really sound guys. They're really enthusiastic.
You just broke up with me there, Michael. Can you hear me? No, he's gone, pal. He's gone, lads. But I think what he's saying is that he's given you a customer endorsement there. He's given you 5 stars, Timmy.
I know, Michael. He's a lovely man.
All right, okay.
He's a lovely, lovely man. Right. I actually fixed a tile on his roof there going back a few months ago, so, yeah.
Extra service. I'm going to be very rude now. I'm going to give away, if you don't mind, just before midday, a car valet for your company. We'll revive me car valeting. Would that be very cheeky of me?
Not at all, Neil, mate. Not at all.
All right, I think he might be back again, just to finish the conversation. Michael, full credit to them. Yeah. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Fantastic service, Neil.
All right.
Outstanding service and really nice guys.
Okay, well said. Appreciate that. Michael, thanks for that endorsement. Brian, thanks for the chat. Appreciate it. Good luck to you, all right?
Thank you, Neil. Thank you.
And as always, Timmy, great to chat with you. Stay in touch, you and James. And I'll give away a car valet for Revive Me Car Valeting. Where are you based, pal?
I think Timmy has gone. We're down in the Marina Commercial Park, Neil.
Okay, all right, in the Marina Commercial Park. And online as well, probably Facebook and Instagram and things like that.
On Instagram, yeah.
Okay, well done, Brian. Cheers, my man. Thanks so much. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Timmy. We'll do a car valet just before midday.
Text the Neil Prendeville Show now. 086-8104-106. Red FM.
I was telling you about that headline yesterday that was making the papers of the weekend, said war on cars. That has to do, of course, with the upcoming budget. And you're probably going to find that taxes for cars in many different fashions will go up, and maybe even might even see more increases in petrol and diesel and excise duties on it and costs on it. I don't know what the story will be on car tax, but they certainly don't want dirty petrol or diesel cars on the road. And that's just one headline from the papers of the weekend, of course. And then we heard of massive increases to bills right across the year. The Examiner had a story on Saturday when they broke down Bord Gáis, Electric Ireland, Energia, Flowgas and Airtricity. And they showed increases across the year for both electricity and gas. And one of them that jumped off the page, actually, well, two of them. One was Energia. When you combined electricity and gas, €805 more than you would have been paying with all of the increases across the spring and the summer. Flowgas was another one, up €718. The others then were like Bord Gáis Energy, €540. And what it is saying, among other things, is that people should be looking at bonkers.ie, or they should be looking at Switcher, looking at ways of getting cheaper fuels for the home, whether it's gas or electricity. But either way, there's more to come, apparently. And 27 energy hikes already this year, and more to come. 27. That was just very slowly, right across the year, gas going up, and also oil going up, and electricity going up. And there was an interesting article that made the Financial Times, was talking about the different reasons. And of course, the dirtiest fossil fuels aren't the only reason for gas prices going up, for instance, tripling in many places. And in the UK, a lot of the smaller providers went bust over the past week. But they were saying that Russia has something to do with it, that they're not repleting a lot of the gas storage stocks for the rest of the world, for whatever reason. But they also said that we also have a huge reliance on coal. And apparently in the UK and across Europe, they are shutting down coal power plants, which means that, you know, it's harder to get electricity without coal plants. And that means the electricity, or indeed the gas that they'd be getting from them, the fossil fuels, there's less of them, so the demand is higher, there's less to go around, so the prices go up. But not only with regards to, say, home heating or turning the lights on at home, these increases will also impact, according to that article, on companies going to work or opening their businesses. Food, fertilizer, anybody involved in any kind of household business or anything like that. Even having people at work turning on the lights. But, you know, you probably will see shortages as we head into the winter with regards to food production because of this. Literally not enough energy to run companies. So it's looking pretty dire across the winter. I hate to be the bringer of bad news. And that on top of the budget as well. So I put in a call to John Lowe, the money doctor, at moneydoctor.ie, just to see if you could shed some light, if you'll pardon the pun, on what we can expect in the future. John, good morning. So we know what's happened in the past with regards to all of our providers. I think people were caught by surprise when they heard of 27 energy hikes. Were you?
Not really. I mean, you know, when you look at the reasons why there have been 27 hikes, let's look at some. You've already mentioned, for instance, the coal-burning plants that have been closed down over the last 2 years. We've also closed down a lot of turf plants as well, which is also, you know, down in the Midlands, it's affected us badly. But more than 50% of Ireland's electricity comes from gas-powered plants, so less than 30% of this gas comes from indigenous sources, and the remaining is imported through two interconnectors from Scotland.
Right.
So you've also then got, on top of that, we're not sufficiently developed yet with wind and solar, and you know, the plans to import and store liquefied natural gas, which would be a cheaper option, we're disrupted by planning objections. Now, since the start of this year, the wholesale gas prices on the international market have increased by more than 150%.
Why? Why?
Again, it's demand and supply as well. There's not enough supply. You mentioned Russia. That could be part of it. Europe generally builds up stores of gases leading up to winter. This year, demand was much higher in spring due to colder than normal weather. And there's also been a decrease in the flow of natural gas from Russia to Europe.
So there's no cartel going on here where one increases and the other does and all that kind of stuff. There's nothing to hide here, no?
No, and again, I suppose we're all waiting for Electric Ireland or somebody to go on strike. That's the next thing. They normally do it at the start of the winter, you know, looking for an increase. But, you know, the budget is next week, and there's going to be a lot of pressure on the government to kind of even for increase winter fuel allowances. That's actually, Neil, €28 per week for 28 weeks. And for some people, it's a difference between actually, you know, not dying from hypothermia. So, you know, all of these things are conspiring. I myself, by the way, I did change, and I changed to an electric car only 6 weeks ago, all electric, and I've been on two trips already, and I suddenly realized, you know, I'll never have to buy petrol or diesel again, but you have to plan so well in advance. You have to know, even if you're going to a hotel. I went to France, down in the middle of France, and I was in Wales, South Wales there the last few days for three nights, but you have to plan every trip.
So you have range anxiety. That's the reason why I'd never touch an electric car. I don't want to be that way.
Well, it's not that bad. Now, in fairness, I've got an Audi Q4, and it's 511 kilometres. So I went from Dublin to Rosslare, Pembroke, and from Pembroke directly to Celtic Manor, actually, just outside Cardiff, and I didn't have to charge at all. There was a charger. In fact, you know, when I got to the hotel, there was one charger and a rake of three-pin plugs. So I got my car. My car would take a day and a third to charge completely on a three-pin plug, Neil.
For God's sake, we'd want to do that.
Well, we were there for, as it happened, 3 days, three nights.
Oh, man, so I'd want to fill up with petrol.
My own home charger will do overnight. So I came home last night and put on the charger, and this morning woke up and it was charged. It only takes 8 hours.
But electric cars, expensive and all as they are, they're of little consolation to people who are paying maybe a grand more for their heating or their gas or their electric than they were last year, with more to come. What should people be doing? Should they be looking at switching providers to get a better deal?
Well, I would always do that anyway. That's a given. You know, you mentioned, you know, the sites like you, Switcher and all these.
Switcher and Bonkers, yeah.
And Bonkers. I would always, and even just go directly and find out, you know, when you ring up your provider and say, look, I'm going to go and switch to another provider. Can you give me a better deal? You'll probably find that they will give you a better deal.
If you ask.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. It's the same as insurance, car insurance, you know, home insurance. They're quite willing to negotiate now.
Does that happen, though? For a consumer, that's very frustrating. I had that situation with an insurance policy for a family member during the summer, where I was able to get it something like €500, €450 cheaper somewhere else. And when I rang the existing insurer, they matched it.
I know, you know, that annoys me intensely. And sometimes when I hear of that, I would actually advise, you know, go away from that insurance company because they didn't offer it to you in the first place. Why should you leave them your business?
For people who don't understand how Bonkers works, you literally go online into the website and you type in who you're with and you type in what you have, whether it's electric or gas or oil or whatever, and yep. then they run some sort of algorithm to tell you where you'll get it cheaper and recommend a different provider. Isn't that the basics of it?
That's the basics of it. But I mean, again, you know, you could do it yourself instead of go directly to your own provider. And, I mean, there's not that many. You mentioned, you know, Bord Gáis, Electric Ireland Energy, Flowgas, SSE Electricity. And of those, I mean, Electric Ireland and SSE Electricity would appear to be the two companies with the least increase.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
You know, so, I mean, they would be your starter pack.
Other things that, as a consumer watchdog, that you would look at would be smart thermometers, maybe, showers instead of baths, switching things off, getting better light bulbs.
Absolutely. You know, you're talking about, you know, put down your thermostat for winter by 1 degree, and you'll save something like 10% of your heating cost. 1 degree. So, I mean, I remember actually some years ago, actually, my daughter was last out of the house coming into my car to bring her to school. And I said to her, Kerry, get back in that house and switch off your bedroom light. You know, otherwise it would have been switched on all day.
Tell me about it. Yeah. My light's on all over the house. Tell me. Even the light bulbs we use, right?
Yes, I mean, I've changed now to these
LEDs.
LEDs, yeah, and they are very. I mean, they last forever for a start, but they're also overall they're cheaper.
So, again,
I remember seeing was there an advert with the two rugby players? They had a number of these kind of things on television, and they were talking about, you know, fill the kettle up only for the amount of tea that you want, not the whole kettle. You know,
we'd have people going around like misers, though, wouldn't we? Check in rooms that the lights are off, that there's not too much in the kettle, turning the heating down. You know, checking for drafts and draft proofing under doors. I mean, it's all over the top.
Well, the only thing, Neil, I would say is that there's an old phrase, better in your pocket, and that's why people will continue to do that and get better value. It is literally all about getting better value, and you don't want to be diddled. I remember one of the greatest experiences I had was coming out of a Rolling Stones concert in Slane Castle, second time, and this is after 25 years seeing them the first time. So 1982, this was 2007, and we were last in, first out, no drink, no food, nothing. As we came out, there was a chip ban on the side, went over there, got a lot of chips and whatever else, food and crisps and some water and orange. And this girl nudged me and she says, I think that girl winked at her manager. I think she's doing you out of 10 euros, she said to me. So I started counting the thing again. When she came back, said, would you mind just going through that again? I think you're doing me out of 10 euros. Now, 10 euros is neither here nor there, as we know. But at the same time, the idea that she was diddling me up for 10 euros. So she said, made some comment like, I gave you curry chips. No, I didn't get any curry chips. Next thing, she goes off, the manager comes forward, he looks at me, says nothing, goes back to the till, opens the till, takes out a tenner, gives it to me, and walks away. You know, and that kind of thing, for me, sums it up. You do not want to be diddled.
You don't want people putting their hand in your pocket unnecessarily.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I didn't think an economist would be caught for a tenner by a chipper van.
Well, it didn't count at the time, you know.
So is it inevitable that there are more increases to come across the winter then?
It is, unfortunately, because, you know, it's back to demand and supply. It's like the housing crisis at the moment. House prices have gone mad and still going mad, maybe for another 2-3 years. But in terms of energy, yeah, unfortunately, we're going to see a little bit more increases. So it's going to affect me as well, by the way, because, you know, I'm using electricity for my car.
How much is it to fully charge a car, incidentally, for your 611 kilometres?
There's a series for those who have electric cars to go on the continent. There's a couple here in Ireland and there's a few in Britain, but there's a thing called Ionity, which is a super fast charger station. And you usually have 5 or 6 of these and there's nobody in them. So you can get in there, 40 minutes, you get your full charge, but it costs about 35 euros. So you're nearly back at not quite the same as so a full charge for me would get 511.
But if you charge it overnight at home and don't use the 35 euro one, how much would that cost you at home?
It's about 9 euros. 8-9 euros. That's all.
Wow. So you're not going back to fossil fuels anymore with regards to the car?
Oh no, I'm finished now with fossil fuels at this stage, and I've even got a gas fire as well. So no coal, no peat. I missed the peat, though. I have to say, the smell of turf was always good.
And now we import turf from Europe, don't we?
Yeah, which is the sad part, isn't it? And all those people who lost jobs down in the Midlands as well, you have to feel for them as well.
I have to tell you, gas fires, they say that 90% of the heat goes directly up the chimney. Were you aware of that?
It definitely is true, because and I have one of these gas detectors as well. But they don't heat. They do not heat. You need a heating. But it looks great, though.
I know. Oh, it looks great. It's very comforting. Just finally, yeah. When I see all of these increases in the headlines in the papers over the weekend, I was thinking how lucky people who are that live in warm climates like the Mediterranean or Spain or whatever. They never have any issues with regards to energy bills because they don't exist.
Well, the only thing is they're probably admiring the fact that we here in Ireland are cuddling up to each other and snuggling in with a big roaring fire.
Yeah. But television. It comes at a high price, doesn't it, all this cuddling?
It does a bit, but it's a great way. It's a great way to do it, to be honest. Especially when you're spending so much money on heat. It's the same thing. Bath together. All that kind of stuff. It helps.
Bath together. You're suggesting.
Well, that's one of the steps. Actually, use the same bath water.
Oh, for God's sake! You're going back to the 1940s, man. Give me a break. Everybody, like, first in, last out kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, if you had a gaggle of kids, I used to say, we came from a large family, Neil, 8 kids, right? And we were so poor, the first time I saw a butcher shop, I thought there was an accident. So that's the kind of stuff that you kind of got used to.
John Lowe getting right back to basics. Listen, thanks for taking the call. Appreciate it, as always. Thanks. Cheers. Thanks, John Lowe, the money doctor. One of the things he's suggesting is bath together or just use the same bath water. That and lots more besides. Paddy O'Brien is seriously very worried, though, with regards to the elderly in Cork. Back after the break.
To Neil Prendeville now, 1851-04-106, Red FM.
And I chat with Paddy O'Brien after 11. Amongst his worries, of course, is that the elderly might be living in fear of being cold or in the dark across the winter, and that's why we need an increase in the fuel allowance, and a substantial one. So after 11, just some texts before that. Please don't be bothered reading out people's texts regarding stiffer sentences and more guards needed, etc. All that repetitive stuff is too upsetting to be reminded of our useless judicial system, which lets these animals roam free. I'm almost regretting having children, as I love them so much. If I had a magic wand, I would consider going back in time and not having kids because of these satanic creatures walking our streets. Please let that boy get over this horror story, says Noel. You talk about the satanic creatures walking our streets. I wonder how broad a brush that is. Certainly I think you're right when you talk about people attacking others with a hammer, but there are others then that just need our help. There's no law and order anymore. The guards can't and won't even prosecute these people. There's no deterrent for this kind of behavior. The guards need an overhaul, need to toughen up, otherwise this city is going only in one direction, and that's downhill. Another text: the problem is soft touch policing policies, liberal criminal justice policies. Whatever came of those who hijacked the bus in Carrigaline a few years back? Remember that gang? Yeah, I do. The answer is stiff mandatory sentences and deportation where necessary, says Richie. It's appalling carry on around the place. It's not safe for anyone these days. People have no regard for lives. To all those out there that take weed and other types of drugs, they're lining the pockets of these thugs and fueling the kind of violence that you broadcast about. We're all locked down effectively in prison for the last 18 months. The young people are venting their frustrations. Venting their frustrations? Is that a confused text from another topic of conversation? Or are you saying that they're venting their frustrations by sucker punching somebody with a fistful of rings? Or attacking somebody around the head with a hammer? I don't know. These thugs need to be thrown in a paddy wagon, thrown in jail. All the guards are available to mind our wonderful politicians at UCC. Get them out in the streets on the beat. The bloody judge is so far removed from reality, giving a slap on the wrist to these people carrying hammers. What's gone wrong with society? Thank you for that. I would suggest, actually, that the Gardaí themselves would much prefer to be out on the streets chasing down criminals than minding politicians, don't you? Back after 11, text 0868104106.
Hey, it's Dave. Join me weekdays from 4 for Dave Max Drive, where I'll help get you home or give you a little lift at home. Big hits, loads of fun features and traffic info. What more could you need? Join me weekdays from 4. Dave Max Drive.
get it off your chest. Call Neil Prendeville now. 1850-104-106. Red FM.
You heard, if you're listening to Lana's 11 o'clock news there, the death of Nadine Lott, the murder of Nadine Lott. It makes the front page of all of the papers this morning. It's way too graphic in detail for me to go into it in any amount of detail. It's just too upsetting. You know, the papers this morning go through much of what happened to her on that night. It's very, very sad. I mean, he's the devil. That's what her mother calls Daniel Murta, her ex-boyfriend, evil, evil ex-boyfriend, who, again, I don't want to go into too much detail as to what he did, but the last day of her life was absolutely, started so beautifully, and her mam told all this in court, because on that day, Nadine, who was murdered, watched her daughter, Kia, perform in the school nativity play, and then went to her dance recital. And then later in the day, they gathered to celebrate Nadine's birthday, sister's birthday. And it was just a beautiful day. And they broke up and went home. And apparently, I was reading the court reports that Nadine's mam texted her saying, look, if you're still there and if you're still out, because she had left early, it's raining, I'll come and get you and I'll drive you. She had left earlier, but she never got a response to the text, you know, saying, if you want to lift home, call me. She said, I never got a reply and I never will. And in the early hours of the following morning, her psycho ex, as the Red Tops call him this morning, and she'd been out of the relationship with him since 2016. He beat her to a pulp, and she suffered traumatic head, neck, chest injuries. And she died 3 days later in St. Vincent's Hospital. A neighbour witnessed the horrific attack and called the emergency services, and her mam came upon the scene and rushed over to the house. And what she saw is recalled in the papers this morning as part of the court reports. I mean, her daughter was unrecognisable. She said, going into her beautiful apartment was the sight from something like you'd expect to see in a horror movie. And he was before the courts yesterday, makes all the papers today, and he was given a mandatory life sentence. Now, what that actually means with regards to time spent, I honestly don't know. You just don't know anymore. But she regards him as being the devil at work. The devil at work. And he was given life for murdering that beautiful, beautiful young girl yesterday. And again, you have to ask yourself the question, what is life? You know, you take a life, should you surrender your own life? As in, should it be a life sentence in the case of end of life sentence? Or 15 out and 10, or 15 out and 12, or whatever the case may be. Anyway, it's just horrible. I often wonder what is happening in the world and what is happening here. Things that we expected to be hearing and reading about from other countries for many years, we are hearing and reading about and even experiencing in our own country, in our own city now, and it's very worrying. Talking about worrying, I didn't have time before 11 to have a chat with Paddy O'Brien, just following up on, you know, heading into the winter. And for many, it could be a winter of worry and anxiety, particularly the elderly. And Paddy O'Brien gave an interview to the Echo this morning, and so little changes year in, year out. I mean, we have a fuel allowance of €28 a week, and coal is €25 a bag, for a proper bag of coal. And I suppose with the elderly who are at home most of the time and feel the cold more than most of us, it's a worrying time for them. Paddy, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. Yes, yeah. Indeed. I spoke to Brida Graham. I had an interview there last week with her. And regrettably, it's the same problem every year. But it's worse this year. It's actually worse this year that the elderly are concerned what's going to happen for the future. I mean, you had a massive increases in both the gas and in electricity.
The people 27 increases across the year so far. 27.
I beg your pardon?
It's a 27 increases in fuel, electricity, gas,
well,
oil prices.
I heard that it was 31 increases.
Maybe it's gone up again.
One of the servers increased their product on four occasions. And I think that the government must and should have more control over what gas and the ESB, because not alone, I'll digress for a moment there, not alone are the elderly worried about this, but I'm meeting to people who I would class as reasonably well off, and they're already complaining about the massive, massive bills. Now, get back to the elderly. The
Do, heating, please, yeah, yeah.
The heating is of vital importance to elderly people. And but quite a few of the elderly people, I said the greatest majority, are living in cold, damp houses, and they require more heating than normally we would say. Right. It's very important, and the IMO, I've said this on numerous occasions, that a few years ago, the IMO, in speaking about the importance of heat for elderly people, said heat is more important than food.
That's the Irish Medical Organisation. Yeah, but they have to skimp from one to pay the other, surely.
Oh yes, and that's for definite. I mean, I'm coming across cases at the moment now where elderly people are actually skimping. They're skimping. They don't have adequate food for every day for the 7 days a week because they're putting aside money for their gas or money for their electricity, and it's creating major.
What's the old age pension now, Paddy? Just remind us.
We'll look at the details because you're contributing, non-contributing. If you're over 800, living alone, so we'll average about 245, around 245. Right, a bag of coal is €25. The good quality coal is €25. You can get a bag as well for 23, but the best is 25.
Yeah.
And we have the free travel, which is fantastic, and I welcome it every year, and I said thanks
but
to the
fuel
coal
allowance is 28 and the coal is 25.
On for 28 weeks. But looking at the pension, I'll say two things. One thing with the pension, the pension is totally inadequate. People can't, they don't have a quality of life, they don't have enough of food every week, and then according to if it's okay for their, keep them up to date on their ASB bill or their gas bill.
And would a tenner, with the tenner now in the budget, I don't know whether it'll be a fiver or a tenner, is that a significant difference, do you think?
A tenner would make a big difference to elderly people. Would make a big difference to elderly people because along the way we have things like the wheelie bin is costing so much a week. That's something, and it's just incredible how the money disappears. But I hope that the government this time, in announcing the increase for elderly people, that the increase announced and that the payment announced for social welfare recipients must and should be implemented immediately. I think it's wrong, it's unfair to expect when 3 or 4 or 5 months. This happened on a good few occasions. But I am meeting people at the moment, elderly people at the moment, especially men, say they go to bed early.
Do they really? Save on fuel.
Yeah, they go to bed early to avoid. They think that the television is taking up electricity and they have no lights downstairs then. So that's it. You know, people saying people, no, I'm cutting back on this and cutting back on the other thing. People are really today, in the year 2021, living a different type of life, quite honestly. Years ago, people could live reasonably well from the pension. But they cannot now. I mean, I would say no to the TDs who have massive salary. I would love to say to each and every one of them, can you live, I'd be honest, on the amount of money we're giving an old age pension to live? Mm. Well, the elderly receive, they deserve a realistic increase to be implemented immediately. That's for the old age pension. And I'm talking about electricity. I would love to see the units increase. I'd love to see it extended. They instead of more 28 weeks to take in more of the winter.
But that's September to April. You don't think that's long enough, no?
No.
Is it that it's long enough, but it's not enough per week, or do you want it higher and for longer?
No, what I want is higher. I want two things. I want to increase in the 28 euro a week, number one, and number two, I'd love to see the duration extended.
To what? May is
into,
it? Or?
Into April, even later. I mean, we can't get bad months, and I said...
When does it stop, then?
It stops out 28 weeks after last Friday.
Okay.
I can't calculate it in my head at the moment now.
Would that bring it up to February or March or something, is it?
Well, maybe yes, and I'd say cover April as well. So, you see, I suppose,
absolutely cover April. Sure, nobody starts winding down their heating systems until sometime in May.
Nobody, and that's right. No, I agree with one thing. Agreeing that John was on prior to the news there. I mean, none of us are. Well, I'm not interested in the people I'm representing this morning. I'm not interested in electric cars. But I would say simple things like the water. There's no point in filling a kettle of water for one person. There's no need. I'm speaking out to the elderly people directly. There's no need to have all the lights in the house on, a light in the hall, because when I visit people and I see the lights on.
They have the lights on, Paddy, for security, though.
Yeah, I say that to them. I say that. I tell them that. I'd rather I said to them, why? Yeah. When people know there's somebody here, I said, have a light in the hall or a light upstairs or something. There's no point having a light all over the house, because I think everybody, including the elderly, must make adjustments in relation to the quantity of the light.
But I hear that some people just retire into one room, or they shut down sections of their house.
Yeah, well, that's happening as well, yeah. But then what I always say, I want to have people to live normal lives. But at the moment, they're not having normal lives because they are really worried. And I have to say this, is that, and I'm not doing this morning is criticising the government, and far from it. I am speaking this morning, I'm speaking what the feedback I get for elderly people. I would be what I call myself a voice for the elderly. I'm saying to the government, elderly people are never so worried. I work with the elderly for more than 50 years. And I've never heard more complaints. I've never heard more people talk about the budget. Will we get this? Will we get this with the ESB? Will we get the gas? Will we get this? Never. And it's, I think that you have to, government must look realistic.
You want a society where an elderly person isn't afraid to be warm and keep the heating on. That's what it's about.
Yeah, exactly.
And do they reach out to Vincent de Paul, I wonder? Some?
Well, some of them would, yeah, and I've heard people talking about get on and argue with the ESB, and they'll do a deal. They won't do a deal. I rang them on several occasions for various people, and what they'll do for you is this: if you criticise a bill or say it's too expensive, they'll talk to you, and then they would say, right, look, we'll give you €70 off the next bill.
That's when this is the catch, when the
bill you're speaking about is paid, we'll give you €70 off your next bill, provided you will stay with us for 12 months. It's a catchphrase.
Yes.
And there's no such thing as getting onto the ESB or Borgosh and saying, oh yeah, and it's not like an insurance company going around and getting the best deal, because I, at least 4 or 5, 6 times I've been onto the ESB for various people, and quite honestly, on one occasion myself, I thought the bill was exceptionally high, and when I queried it, they said to me, when that bill is paid, we'll discuss it with you.
But of course, the elderly feel the cold more, don't they?
Yeah,
and also, you know, when you were talking about people...
Then require more heating. I mean,
yeah.
I look to people tell me, some people tell me they'd actually would wear a coat around the house.
Yeah.
And that's
the
harm either. We wear a coat around the house, and because they're saving electricity.
That is hardship. And don't kid yourself, the cost of food has gone up as well.
It has, but that's the next point I want to make. The cost of food, I think it's food has gone up so much in at least the last 2 years.
Yeah.
It's absolutely incredible. And it's not an exaggeration, but it's almost putting it out of reach for the elderly people. They can't go to the supermarket anymore and get a big basket, a big trolley of stuff. They can't. They're buying from day to day because continuously and constantly in their minds they say, I must remember I have an ESB bill.
Yeah.
I must remember I have a gas. I can't buy this. I can't buy that.
Yeah.
So I use the word, they're absolutely just skimping.
Yeah.
That is the situation.
There was a lot to be said for the old meters, wasn't there, where you had a handle on what you were putting in,
exactly,
as opposed to waiting for a bill.
Yes, a lot. You put in your money and you get your gas or your electricity, whatever the case may be. But that's it. I mean, I feel sorry for the people, especially people living on their own.
Yeah.
To me, they're most vulnerable of the elderly people. A person just living alone on a non-contributory pension, they don't get as much as the person on the contributory pension. But I mean, they're all suffering.
I know. You know something, though? Like, why do I hear of people who really do struggle like that, right? And then when they pass away, we discover that they had fairly substantial amounts of money in the bank. Is that an Irish thing?
Would you believe this now? I have never heard anything like that. I've never heard any people I've been dealing with down through the years that afterwards I've heard of people.
Oh, sure, I know that vast majority are genuine, but there are people who really do, like, they almost live kind of like miserly existence, but probably have hundreds of thousands in the bank. I wonder why is that, is
people,
it?
What are elderly people doing? I'm just frightening that they're putting so much a week away for what? For the funeral?
Or is it that they feel that they have to leave a legacy of money behind them? Would you ever encourage them to say, spend your money?
That's it, yeah. Well, I would always look after himself. I mean, the thing is, John this morning said, made a lovely statement. I've been saying this for years, and this applies to all the service people. better in your pocket.
Yeah.
Like, do you know what I mean? Why should you go in and lose loads of electricity, loads of gas, the same with the elderly people? Why
just to leave money in a will.
Yeah, leaving money to your sons and daughters. Enjoy it, and have a nice quality of life.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But I'm sure that probably that's happening. Probably feel they just want to do something, but I personally have never come across people after a few months that I meet a son or daughter and they would maybe it has happened, they wouldn't say it to me, and then they would say, my mother left X amount of pounds or euro or thousand, whatever the case may be. But
no, I would just hate that there were people who were elderly felt that they were obliged to leave something after they pass away, because that's the done thing, and suffer in hardship in their old age because of it. I think that's very sad. That's the only point I'm making on it.
That's very, very... They're denying themselves a nice life. They're denying themselves a lot.
I know.
A lot of things that they go in by, and they're wrong. And I know that thousands of elderly people listen to your program this morning. Spend the money on one person, that's yourself. Spend it on your home. Buy it, try and get adequate food.
I'm so glad you said that, because they will listen to you, really. It's about you being comfortable in life.
I hope so. I'll say spend the money on yourself. Your sons will be well looked after, your grandchildren well looked after. The state is giving you the money for you.
Yeah.
For your pocket only, nobody else.
Yeah.
You know, and not be denying yourself. Just don't be going to bed at 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock to save electricity, because you're not saving much electricity in 2 hours. Enjoy the television and enjoy the amount of electricity that you have, but don't have it on all over the house.
And for those that are anxious, we have to wait for the budget to see what will be given.
Yeah, but they're all waiting for that. I mean, a lot of the papers are going overboard over the weekend. I had some journalists saying 20. They won't get 20. I'd love that if they got 20, but they won't get 20.
More realistic between
and
5
I
and 10,
think,
is it?
Quite honestly, and I don't like using this expression, €5 for elderly people in this current awful, miserable situation would be an insult.
Let's see what happens.
Because many of the elderly people, I saw correspondence from one ASB server that from September on, the electricity was going up €6 a week. €6 a week. And if the government is going to give them a €5, that's a contrary.
That's a backwards step.
I think I'm using the expression, the government must be realistic with the increase, and they must remember the hardship and the misery that elderly experience at the moment.
Right.
Maybe some years ago, a fiver was appreciated, but it isn't any longer.
Yeah.
I mean, 10 should be a minimum. €10 a minimum for elderly people to have sufficient food to eat, to be out of debt, that they're not in debt with their ASB or with their board.
Yeah, they should be enjoying life and given the most that can be possibly given. Let's see what the budget brings. But appreciate you taking the call, Paddy, as always. Paddy O'Brien, advocate for the elderly, doing terrific work. He's the man we should listen to. Text 0868 104 106. Back after the break.
Call the Neil Prendeville Show now. 1850 104 106. Red FM.
Just a few texts from yesterday's program talking about the government being down on Leaside and the $165 billion that they want to spend, a lot of it on this new metro rail link. The government should fund the return of the train to Youghal. They would only have to fund it from Middleton, as the train already serves as far as Middleton. Cork families would use the train to Youghal, as every family doesn't have a car. It would also bring a lot of revenue to Irish Rail and Youghal Town. If they were going to go as far as Middleton with the project, why not just relay the track all the way to Youghal. Let's not get ahead. Well, be a problem there. They want to use that as the greenway, don't they? That's the difference. Let's not get ahead of ourselves with Metro Rail Link talk in Cork. Our roads are an absolute joke. Tell me about it. The traffic management plan is a bigger disgrace. We need to crawl before we can walk. Jesus wept. We live in a glorified village, not Barcelona. Fix the roads. I'll believe the M20 when I'm driving on it. As for Dunkettle, that better go ahead, because it's already under construction. How stupid politicians. How stupid do they think we are? As stupid as them? Well, keep electing them, I suppose so. Michal is down talking more BS, I see. More empty promises. He'll probably give himself another pay rise for doing absolutely nothing. And then just a selection of different... My husband had two cases where his taxi was broken into, and he was told the same thing, even though there was CCTV footage. He was told the same thing by the guards, don't prosecute. Also, he parked his car outside our door. It was written off last year by a runaway driver who had no insurance. They told my husband he only lived 10 minutes away. And the next day they said the same thing. Don't pursue it, as he's just too dangerous an individual. So what? People are saying, so what people are telling you is true. I would be afraid to come on air to fill you in, but that's my story. Don't prosecute. He's too dangerous. That kind of policing where the guards try to deter you from taking things further has been going on for years. Wake up. That man is on the ball. A few years ago, my daughter was attacked by three teen boys from a certain ethnic group. She still suffers panic attacks and sleepless nights. The doctor said she has PTSD. The poor child, she was doing her junior cert at the time and had to miss her Irish orals as she was in the Mercy Hospital with injuries. I went to the guards, and as God is my witness, the Garda advised us. She said, don't take it any further, as things would be worse for us. The dirty scum got away with it. A vicious circle. And thank you for those texts. Keep them coming. Text 0868104106. And just finally, Kieran says, people are begging on the streets, and some who are sitting down with paper cups are clearly getting welfare. Begging should be outlawed. Take their welfare off them if they're caught begging, says Kieran. By text to 0868104106. I want to go back to the phone lines. Valentina, good morning.
Hi, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And also, thank you for providing copies of the back and forth messages on social media and what have you. But tell us your story. You and your boyfriend, or your fiancé, are looking for a house, is it?
Yeah.
When you say looking, do you want to buy one? Do you want to rent one? Or what do you want to do?
Yeah, the original idea was to buy one. We have been mortgage approved for nearly a year now.
Yeah.
But basically, when we were in the full lockdown for 6 months, at some point, they blocked the viewing. So the prices went up because people kept betting online without viewing the places. So there's nothing in our budget, very little left. So
what you had been approved for, those properties have gone way up in value over the last year and a half, so.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Exactly. So your option now, for now anyway, is renting, is it?
Renting.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Well, and have you been replying to ads, looking for viewings?
Yeah, to rent out a place. But basically what happens is you need to reply as soon as the ads come up. But otherwise, after a few hours, the ads are taken out because there's too many people applying. And when then you get to the viewing, you don't know what the criteria are, why they're not giving you the house, for example. And if you go to view a place where there's a company involved, so like there's no the landlord, but there's actually an agency.
Yeah.
They ask you for how much money you're getting per year, which makes you think that basically they're giving the place to the people who get more money.
Oh, so when they ask you your salary, Do you know what the rent is before they ask you that?
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. I wouldn't apply for a house.
You think that it's a fair question to ask somebody what their annual income is?
No, I think it's very private, and you would assume that if I apply for a house, I can afford to pay the rent.
Well, they may be in fear that you might get your feet under the kitchen table and not pay the rent, I suppose.
Yeah, but still, I think it's a very private question. You can ask for a proof of employment, and that's totally okay, obviously.
Okay, so here we know then. We know that HAP is an issue with many landlords. We know that children is an issue. We know that dogs and pets are an issue.
Oh, yeah.
You're saying that salary is also in the equation. Clearly, you'd need to give a reference. Is there anything else they look for?
They ask you for references from work, just to prove that you're a full-time employed person. And they also ask you what is your salary, and they ask you for proof of address, of your current address, and they ask you for bank account statements as well.
Statements. They want to see your banking.
Yeah, how much money you have saved there, and basically if you're actually getting that salary that you're saying you're getting, I guess. Proof of ID and your current landlord's reference.
I have no issue with references or proof or ID. I have a big issue with wanting to see your bank statements, though, or asking you questions like, how much do you earn a year? I mean, it never used to be like that. And anyway, so you started looking and viewing, but there's an issue with internal viewing. Explain that.
Well, like, What do you mean by internal viewing?
Well, you have a back and forth here with somebody who's renting a property or something, and that you couldn't go in to look at it.
Yeah. So basically, this man, a private landlord, put up an ad a few days ago, last week, and the price was $1,100 for a house near Garbo, and it was already quite expensive for the area because it's 35 minutes from the city centre.
Okay.
I applied anyway for it, and he said that he needed to do some works in the house. So he offered to give us an external viewing of the property. And in the meantime, I got a notification from that where the price went up by 200 euro.
From 1100 to 1300?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll come back to that in a moment. So an external viewing is you going and looking in the windows, is it?
Not even. You look at the garden, I guess.
Why would somebody advertise it as being for rent if there was still, and he was still in the middle of working on it? Like, wouldn't you think he'd wait, or she'd wait, or whatever, until people could go indoors and it was ready for occupation?
I guess because you want to know what you can get, basically.
Of course you do. Of course you do. So you queried with him as to why it went up by 200 euro, and what was the reason?
He said that he put up the price indeed because there was loads of interest.
I think the words used were overwhelming demand.
Yeah, overwhelming demand. So he decided to push up the price because he knew someone would have taken it anyway.
And that doesn't preclude him from putting it up again if the demand continues from 13 to 14.
Yeah. And like, I know that if you go to a viewing, you can always offer more money, even if it's for renting, like not buying. So
it is heartbreaking, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very frustrating. Like, I'm here now with two friends of mine, and we all have been looking around for places, and we are all full-time employed, and we have been in Ireland for nearly 10 years, all of us. So, like, it's it doesn't make any sense anymore.
I heard Joe Duffy yesterday chatting with someone who said that there was an ad in Dublin, somewhere in Dublin, I have no idea, I can't even remember the exact amount, but I think it might have been something like 350 a week for your own bedroom, but you could only stay there two nights of the week. And you had your own, you got your own microwave and kettle in your bedroom. You couldn't use the kitchen. You would share the bathroom with the other occupants, including the owner of the property. But you had to let them know what two nights of the week you'd be staying in the bedroom. Does you find that bizarre?
I find that absurd and ridiculous that no one looks into this big problem. Like, people are talking about students not finding accommodation, and it's not like it affects everyone. Like, my boyfriend, he's from Cork. So, like, it's not just a thing for people coming into the country from somewhere else. But like, no one has interest to look into it.
And you'd get a fine mortgage for 1300 a month.
Actually, the mortgage, it would cost nearly half of the current renting.
Oh my God, it's heartbreaking. Have you viewed many properties, Valentina?
Not many. I viewed a few of them, around 10 maybe, because it's very hard to get a viewing as well, and then they never come back to you anyway, so.
You just don't get a response.
Yeah. They just say, okay, we'll give the papers to the landlord, for example, and we'll let you know. Like, I mean, you'll be called back if you're the chosen one.
And you're just not the chosen one.
I'm not, apparently. But, like, I'm not the only one. Like,
I know. Sorry to hear that. So you walked away from the 1300, did you?
Yeah, I told them that I wouldn't. I told him I would never, like to have a landlord as such, like, I'm actually happy not to have to deal with someone like that.
It's greed, isn't it? It's just pure and utter greed.
Yeah, I think the problem is there's no law there in place telling them, okay, if you put up the rent, there should be a reason, a valid reason. And like, if like the cost of the rent should correspond to the inflation.
Some would say it's capitalism, girl, that you give it to the person who's willing to pay the most.
Yeah, that's how it is at the moment.
Yeah, I know, I know. Well, good luck on your search, all right?
Yeah, thank you anyway. Thanks.
If I hear of anything, we'll be back to you. Never know who might be listening. Take care, Valentina. I wish you success in the end. Cheers. There was a tweet, actually, lovely girl. There was a tweet there, actually, that we saw over the weekend from a Dr. Sharon Lambert, who said, if I were to rent out the bedrooms in my house at the average price of a room to rent in Cork, it would generate $2,880 per month. That's just renting out her bedrooms in her house. She'd make $2,880 a month. If I were to do the same in Dublin, I would net around €5,000 a month renting out my bedrooms. My mortgage is €950. You see why the maths don't add up? She says private operators are important, but not everyone wants to buy. But a system that traps renters with no opportunity to save is keeping people stuck. The older you get, the harder it is to get an affordable mortgage if you want to pay off over 30 years. That's why it's important, I suppose, to get the mortgage as young as possible so you can pay off the yoke of a mortgage as fast as possible. As you get older, of course, it's harder because the maths don't add up. They wouldn't be interested. I mean, if you're looking at 30 years, they're probably realistically not going to give a mortgage like that to anybody over the age of 50, maybe even less. Back after the break.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Cork's Red FM. Our phone lines remain open after midday. 1850 104 106.
What am I talking about? The age of 50, there's no way they give a 30-year mortgage to a 50-year-old. There's no way they would take a gamble on somebody paying it back at the age of 80. It's more likely to be 40 years old and under to get a 30-year mortgage. And even at that, they might only offer a 25-year mortgage. So you really are in the rat race of property buying at a very young age in this country, and you need to be well sorted by 35 or 40, don't you? To stretch it out over 30 years, because at 40, you might even be lucky to get a 25-year mortgage. Think about it. Text 0868104106. John, thanks for holding. Morning. Thanks for holding. My apologies for keeping you so long. You want to, actually, there was a headline in The Echo yesterday. While on the one hand, we were talking about the 185 billion and all of the roads and rail networks for Cork, and it's all fantastic, happy, clappy stuff. But yet they say they haven't got the money to put in a public toilet in the city, right?
Absolutely. We have a situation where the elites were out in the college yesterday and down the park, and I bet you they didn't have to go for a slash of the bushes.
You got it right, pal, in one. You can be damn sure of it.
So what's going to happen now? So the rest of the city toilets now have told us, despite the tax that we're paying, that we don't have a pot to piss on.
We don't have a pot to pee in, is right. Yeah, they had put they had put aside 125 grand.
And we're through.
So is that's the cost of a public toilet for Corkonians of the city? Is it 125 grand?
Well, according to them, it is.
So why then did they spend 350 grand on the robot trees?
Well, that's a very good question. If you cast your mind back,
just move around a little bit there, John, because you always make sense. I want to hear you.
Cast your mind back to all the Lord Mayors that had new bathrooms put in the City Hall.
New carpets.
And so you're telling us now so that we must line up now and we must go on over the key wall into the leaders.
It's intolerable, to say the least, that we're still talking about this year in and year out.
Second city in Ireland, allegedly, and you have to find a bush. And tell me now, will the Gardaí still be picking up the people who get caught short and be charging with a public order offence for having a pee in public?
Well, the guards will probably tell them go into a pub or a restaurant or a hotel, right?
Yeah. And a whole lot of way now. That's the people that's running their business.
Yeah, not
that's
a great...
Every Tom, Dick and Harry walking in and out, like, and they have to pay staff to clean it after them, because you know as well as I do, a lot of people won't respect the toilets, you know?
Is there no public toilet anywhere? I mean, is there one in the library or is there one in the public car park, anything?
Well, they opened one in the old gun stores in the North Carolina Street, but this closed that now again. Because you can go anywhere now.
So the one that was there was in the Paul Street, it was in the North Main Street car park, that's shut.
That's correct.
What about were they planning one for the library, was it?
They were supposed to be putting one on the parade there, I think, to the best of my knowledge. But so, I mean, the one that's still at the moment is only for showing up, you know?
And why then can we find so much money, no disrespect to cyclists, and one of them myself, for all of the cycle lanes?
That's why you have three idiots in the one government. You know, they're anything but the three wise men, you know?
I don't get it, man. I just don't get it.
Oh, no, I don't get it either, but tell me now, people who are paying rates now and paying their taxes, you're being discarded. You're like, you know, like it was one thing to be told to bring home your rubbish, but are we supposed to bring a plastic bottle with us though when we go, right?
Well, maybe they're worried that if there was a public toilet, they would be used, that toilet would be used and abused.
Well, why don't they pay somebody to work in it, like a normal situation?
How much would, okay, so we got somebody working in there then. How much would you be willing to pay to use it?
Yeah, I don't know. I suppose would have to be, you know, trashed out.
Well, firstly, do you think that you should have to pay for it?
I wouldn't have a problem about paying for the toilet, because if I go into a bar or something to use a toilet, I'd either get a soft drink or a coffee so I can use the toilet.
Okay, you get a soft drink, I think, which is not a phone line, not a great phone line. Would a euro, 2 euro, 3 euro be enough or too much?
You call it 2 euros.
Happy to pay. But so it would be...
We ask the government what Pfizer sponsor, right?
Or Coca-Cola, they're sponsoring the bikes anyway. Would they be interested?
There you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
Or they might come up with a tablet that would stop us from going to the diver.
All right. Not a great phone line. We got there in the end. Let's get other people's thoughts on it. Thank you, John. Text 0868104106. If it were there, which it isn't, because they've scrapped the budget for it that they'd set aside for it, how much would you pay? Text 0868104106. Pick up the phone on 1850104106. I remember. Oh, listen, I did get one text in, all right, about 007 on the Bond movie. Never so disappointed with the end of the Bond movie. Very poor. 98% of it was brilliant, but the last 5 minutes... Tut, tut. His job is to hand over the jersey. I found this Bond movie way too woke for me. Now that's whetting my appetite even more to go down and see it in the Regal Cinema in Yall. Anyway, no spoilers here. That's as much as I'm going to say about it. I can tell you no more of it because I have no idea. I know that Tom McCarthy was sending me photographs from Longacre Tavern in Times Square overnight of the entire Bond cast inside in the pub. 007 in there, Daniel Craig, the whole lot of them having some kind of an after premiere party. So well done, Tom, on that one. But anyway, listen, you may be disappointed with the end of the Bond movie, but you'll never be disappointed with the Gundy Humphreys gig. And last time I spoke to him, everything was locked down. There was no gigs. And I remember talking to Gundy. I think we were looking for the most missed bar person when all the pubs were closed. And he was one of the calls saying that the bar staff and the bar people in the Cotton Ball were the best in Cork. I remember chatting with him at times. He said, come back to me when you're gigging. He's gigging. He's played the Leaping Salmon. He's played the Beer Garden in Turner's Cross. And he played the Derby in Ballincollig. Gundy, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. How are you?
Good. What's it like to be back, pal?
Oh, it's a breath of fresh air, man.
You haven't played the Cotton Ball yet, though, have you?
No, but it's the 24th. The 24th of this month. So...
What was it like? I mean, was it great having people back? I mean, I know there's probably maybe limited amounts, but still in all.
I suppose the two main things have changed is really, you can't dance. Not yet, anyway. We're still waiting for a date when that little thing will be lifted away from the people. So they just be shaking their tushies on the chairs, I suppose.
That's it, tapping the feet. Yeah.
And maybe
singing along.
Well, yeah, and then, of course, you know, there are earlier time gigs as well, so, like, Sundays are around 7 to 9, and you know, the Saturdays are, like, 9 to 11.
You must be delighted, though, to be doing something.
Man, I'm just over the moon. Actually, I was the last one this weekend, down in the Derby. I'm actually back in the Derby this Sunday coming, already, so...
So have you a lot of bookings?
Yeah, well, I got to thank my manager, Elsha D'Souza, for that. She's a Cork's greatest. Oh, she's brilliant. So
she keeps the calendar full up for you, does she?
She does all the magic. All the magic.
And when are you back in the Cotton Ball?
The Cotton Ball is the 24th. It's the 24th of this month.
Sunday night, is it?
Yeah.
And have you been practicing away all through the year?
Well, actually, I have, because I've been When the gigs went, I turned to Smule. I don't know if you've heard of Smule.
But,
it's a singing platform, you know, and like, so I joined up with that, and so you can make your own music videos, and I've made 551 now since, yeah, 551
music videos.
yeah.
You need to get out more, pal.
I know, but you see, when you start doing them, then, and you know, I built up a lovely, it's following and everything. So,
wow, like, hey, you're, you know. Hey, man, you're keeping it country, right?
Yeah. I'd like to settle down, but they won't let me.
Got it. Fugitive must be a rolling stone. Got a gun in your pocket? Are you just happy to see me? Down every road, there's always one more city. I like it, brother. I'm on the run. The highway is my home. Oh, I could listen to that all day. Ideally when I'm driving the motor car, you know?
Yeah.
Is that you playing there?
The guitar? No, that's a track. That's a track there. Can you
play the guitar?
Oh yeah.
Let's say it's you then, shall we?
Okay. I'm lonely, yeah, but I can't afford the luxury of having one I love to come along. She'd only slow me down and they'd catch up with me.
Great production.
Home production.
It's amazing what you can do at home now. Gundy, I love it. Did you ever play any of the country music songs backwards?
Does that mean you get your wife back, your dog back, and your house back?
You give up the whiskey, you get your wife back, the dog back, and the house back if you play the songs backwards. Anyway, listen, thanks for honouring your promise. You came back when you were gigging. You're back in the Derby again, and you played the Cotton Ball Sunday the 24th.
Yes. You did promise you'd fill it for me.
All right. Is that, booking only, is it? Or can they just rock in on the night?
No, they can rock in. You can, if they want to book a seat and everything as well, they can get in contact with Ian there at the Cotton Ball. Fantastic man, fantastic staff. The whole place is just a great place.
And are you on social media where people can check you out for your gigs and stuff?
Yeah. Just go on Gundy Humphreys on Facebook, and all the connections to everything around that.
Thanks so much. Any day that we get a good laugh and a smile is a good day. Thanks for that, Gundy. Look after
you
yourself.
Go, my friend.
Keep it country, pal. Take care.
Oh, I will. Cheers. Thank you so much. The Neil Prendeville Show on
Twitter at NeilRedFM. Listen, lads, if you're looking for love, I remember the bad old days of the lockdowns, chatting with Izzy Show Busy on the air. At the time, I was calling her Izzy Match Busy because she created the very first Instagram live matchmaking show, and it all had to do with the stories she was hearing from people who were saying it was impossible to date. Season one went very well, a lot of success stories. She's launching season two and joins me for a couple of minutes by phone. Izzy, good morning.
Good morning, Neil.
Lots of success from the first series, but did you get any wedding invites from any of them yet?
Well, this is the goal with the new series that we started on Sunday, Neil, because there was a bit of shifting, you know, there was a lot of sliding on into DMs and everything else. But I think we might get a wedding with the new series, because the greatest thing is we're out of lockdown. So there's a little bit more possibility with the old dating scene again.
Good. So how does it work?
Okay, so basically, if you're interested in coming on, all you have to do is be from anywhere in Ireland. You know, obviously, preferably Cork, of course, because it's the best place ever. But you have to be over 18, you need to be from Ireland, and single. And then just pop me a message on my Instagram. That's the way I'm working it. So it's Izzy_showbusy. And then we'll take it from there. And I bring on about 7 or 8 contestants. They chat to me on this live, and I host it every second Sunday at 8 p.m. on.
Oh, so all of this is on screen then?
Yeah, exactly. And so people come on, and that's what's so great about it, Neil, is because, you know, you're swiping left and right on Tinder and you're not getting a feel for someone. So I think when you see someone and you're able to actually look at them and see how they smile, how they talk, you know, how they move, you're like, oh, I like a little bit of him now. If I saw him on Tinder now, I wouldn't know what to think. But now that I've seen him on a live, I definitely think there's something about
okay,
him.
Okay, so there's you and the two, right? So three on the screen. What if they don't like each other?
So it's me and one other person, and I don't necessarily set you up with someone. It's all about who's watching, Neil. So
then they DM. I gotcha.
Exactly. So I bring on those seven or eight people individually. And you see, what people like about it as well is I'm not actually physically setting you up with someone. Like, if you like one of the contestants, fantastic.
Off you
but
go.
But the way I do it is, you know, there might be 700 people watching these lives. And one of them is going to be your Mr. or Mrs. Rice to slide on into your DMs and take it from there.
And how are you finding it with the male-female balance? I'm not talking about male-female relationships here, but are men as good as women for wanting to be part of this?
Do you know what? When I first started it back in season one, I was struggling a little bit more to find the men, but they seem to be a little bit more forthcoming. This season, I don't know if they've seen the way it's worked and they've gone, do you know what? That's not as threatening as I once thought it was, and it's only 5 minutes. But it's funny as well, because like, I had one guy on the episode that we did just Sunday gone, and like, he's quite a shy character, but he was like, I know that you're really good at putting people at ease, and he was like, I'll come on and chat to you if it's only you for 5 minutes. So I think it makes people feel more comfortable, because technically they're only talking to me, even though, like, you know, there's
everyone
an audience
is watching, I know. And what's the age profile like then? Is it wide?
Absolutely. So like, the episode just gone, I had people in their 20s, 30s, 40s. But I know from season one, I think we had people in their 50s and 60s. So like, I think there's no age limit on love. Like, I would love to find a guy that can use Instagram in his 60s or 70s, same with a woman, and put them on the show, because I just think it would be so cute to watch, you know?
Okay, so if people want to get involved, next show is on Sunday online. How can they do it?
So the next episode is Sunday the 17th of October. So I do it every second week.
Gotcha.
And they can literally just pop me a message on my Instagram, Izzy_showbusy. I'll take some details off you. And I normally chat to them before they go on the show and, you know, find out a little bit more about them. And we just take it from there.
Okay. Listen, good luck with that. Delighted that it's back for another series. You'll find Izzy on an Instagram search just with the word Izzy anyway. Isn't that right? You're that famous?
Well, hopefully so, anyway.
All right, girl, look after yourself, and well done with that. Appreciate it. And the show airs again Sunday week. And follow her on Instagram, join and hook up, and, you know, move on. You know, it's been tough enough for the last 18 or 19 months. Why not? You deserve it. Our lines will stay open at 1850 104 106. Can you wish a very special happy 60th birthday to Breda Walsh from Douglas? She's a home help in the Douglas area. Ah, Breda, nice to hear from you. Is your birthday today? I know you well. She's listening to you now, Neil, from sunny Playa Blanca in Lanzarote, with love from Mags and Lorraine. Thank you so much. Happy birthday, Breda. Great girl, know her well. And also, just a very fast one, another happy birthday as well. It's birthday day for Lily Sue Maloney, whose 15th birthday is today. Pat and all of the family were in touch with me. Pat sent me a text this morning asking to pass on best wishes. Happy birthday, that we all love her loads. So happy birthday to you, Lily Sue Maloney. Text 0868 104 106. The lines will stay open. I'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this Red FM podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and check out redextra.ie for more great Red FM content.